Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is November 2nd, 2013, and this is episode 40. Gotta go fast, 22 years of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Did you say Sonic?
I sure did.
Sonic.
You know, welcome once again, folks, to GameBuoy.org. We're going to talk about Sonic the Hedgehog here in just a moment, but real quick, I have a brief bit of errata for you. Last week, we discussed very briefly the possibility of Slagkick buying a PlayStation 4 down the line, but in the immediate future, purchasing the PlayStation 3 version of Assassin's Creed 4. I don't know that that's still a thing he intends to do.
Well, I mean, go ahead and explain it. And then I'll comment.
But basically, per the U.S. PlayStation blog, and I'm going to read from the U.S. PlayStation blog right now, we will link this article on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
For those of you who purchased the PS3 disc version of the games, you do not need a PS4 system to redeem your code. So feel free to redeem it as soon as you pick up your PS3 copy, and you can download your digital copy later when your PS4 arrives.
So my understanding after reading this blog post is that you still have to make the actual purchase on PS4, and there is a deadline for the certain games. And in the case of Assassin's Creed 4, it is the end of January. So, I mean, it would be nice if I had a PS4 by the end of January, but I don't know, honestly.
Yeah, the PlayStation blog actually very specifically says that you can do all of this on your PlayStation 3.
Oh, does it? Yeah. Okay, then I was misreading it then.
Yeah, very.
In that case, that's great.
Very specifically, they even call out that you don't need a PS4 at the time of doing this.
Oh, okay. And then it will just be, I guess, in your PSN account and downloadable.
Yes, presumably. Exactly so. Just in the same way that you can currently buy Vita games on your PS4 or PS3 while they're on sale, even if you don't have a Vita.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense, actually. Thank you for clearing that up.
No problem.
Before we talk about Sonic.
Yeah, as you say, before we get to Sonic the Hedgehog, we have a pretty full slate of our usual follow-ups and news bits, so in the interest of our time and yours, let's get this party started.
Let's do it.
Slagkick, if you'd like to take this first one, I'm sure I will comment as well.
Yes, Farrell Umihara Kawase, am I saying that right?
Yeah, pretty much.
You know how I pronounce Japanese, poorly, is going to be localized, according to Natsume. It's going to be coming in early 2014, and it will be released under the title Yumi's Odd Odyssey. That's going to be an eShop release.
On 3DS.
On 3DS, correct.
In North America in early 2014.
So that's pretty cool. I mean, I really feel like that not enough people are drawing attention to this really cool selection of just, like, fun, weird little games on the 3DS eShop. I mean, we've talked about Hersploosh and stuff like that. You know, like, Harmonite was exclusively an eShop download. I think people don't realize that there's a lot of great content being put out.
Well, I would say that that's true of all of the digital distribution channels. We talked about that quite a bit when we did a whole episode on digital distribution. It's just a really great space for, you know, sort of people without a, you know, big studio backing to get some really interesting software out there. I'm most excited, though, because this is the first time we're getting an Umihara Kawase game. These are some really incredible series of 2D grapple platformers,
yeah,
dating back to the Super Nintendo era. And most notably, you know, a lot of these grapple platformers have very rigid grapple mechanics. Umihara Kawase, there's like an elasticity to the grapple, so you can have all sorts of fun playing with physics and bouncing around. And it's just a really, really great little series. I'm really excited that it's finally coming overseas. I would highly recommend it when it does come out next year.
Awesome.
Psychic, if you'd like to talk about this bad news for a moment.
Well, I don't really care about Young Justice because, DC. But if you are someone who likes Young Justice and you are a Wii or Wii U owner who wanted to be picking up Young Justice Legacy, sorry, but Little Orbit, the studio who is developing it, and Warner Brothers, who is publishing it, have decided to cancel that for the two Nintendo consoles. It'll still be out for PS3, 360, PC, and 3DS, so if you are into that, you can check it out on one of those systems, but I'm not personally affected. I mean, it could be cool. It's an action RPG, and those can be fun, but,
Well, I think the biggest part of why this is sort of irritating is that, you know, it's a big deal. Greg Weissman, the writer of Disney's Gargoyles, who does Young Justice, the animated series, was working on the story for this game to keep it sort of in the canon of the game series, or I'm sorry, of the television series. And, you know, certainly, as you say, it's still coming out on these other consoles, but if I was going to play it, would be playing it on Wii U. And I think I went from a will buy to a will probably not buy.
See, I didn't realize that he was involved with that series.
Yeah. Let's see, we have news on another newcomer in Guilty Gear Xrd Sign. This one is, of course, Faust. This is, of course, exciting for those of you who have been following the Guilty Gear series since its original iteration, where he appeared as the character Dr. Baldhead. Strictly speaking, of course, these two characters have never been confirmed to be the same, but it's the popular fan speculation, and I accept it.
Also in Guilty Gear Xrd Sign is going to be Slayer the Vampire returning. So, that's cool. He's kind of a sexy, very, like,
He's like a sexy Englishman vampire.
I was going to say European, I'm here for it. But I guess Englishman.
Yeah, I'm here for it. I love these games. Slayer, in particular, is one of my favorite characters, so I think it's great. I think his new art for the game looks great. You can, of course, find a link to Silicon Era's article about that on GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org. Yeah, I'm really excited. I like Arc System Works fighters a lot, and I think that Xrd Sign looks great. So, sorry, haters.
In Final Fantasy XIII Lightning Returns, Lightning will have the ability to eradicate entire species of monsters, and if you should exterminate an entire species, they will never spawn again in the game.
I am just waiting for the PETA outlash.
Skeletons are people, too!
Really? That's a little spoopy.
In other news, Capcom is doing a collaboration with Weekly Shonen Jump magazine to bring Chopper in as a assistant player in Monster Hunter 4.
So this is like double dip news for you.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot out of this news piece. I love One Piece, I love Monster Hunter, I love Chopper. So,
now is One Piece still pretty popular here in the States?
I think so. I'm a little out of touch with the anime fandom here in the US, but I know it's still huge in Japan.
So, I mean, there's a possibility that maybe this will happen when this game gets localized.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's still an if, technically, but fingers crossed.
It's a Monster Hunter game.
Hey, it took us several years to get 3. I had given up hope.
Okay.
Here's a follow-up on a news story from last week. Despite the language on the Ubisoft television commercial or trailer or whatever context that was, the promotional video that they had published, indicating that the 60 minutes of exclusive gameplay on Sony consoles for Assassin's Creed 4 and Watch Dogs would only be exclusive to the PlayStation family of consoles for the next 6 months. Ubisoft has come out and claimed that they have no intention of bringing this material to other consoles in the future. This language was apparently included sort of to cross their T's and dot their I's. It is not a statement of intent.
And to amend their asterisks.
Well, that's, I mean, you know, sort of the idea. Why don't you take this next one?
Yeah, it's kind of topical for our episode today. We were talking last time about 3D Sonic the Hedgehog, and along with 7 other titles in the Sega 3D Classic series. I was going to call it 3D Sega Classics, but Sega 3D Classics. For Nintendo 3DS, obviously, will be released towards the end of this month and throughout December here and in Europe. Coming first on the 28th of November is 3D Space Harrier and 3D Super Hang-On. Following the next week on December 5th is 3D Sonic the Hedgehog and 3D Altered Beast. A week later on December 12th is 3D Echo the Dolphin and 3D Galaxy Force 2. And then finally, on the 19th of December, 3D Shinobi 3 and 3D Streets of Rage. That's a pretty nice little selection of 3D classics.
Yeah, and you know, aside Altered Beast, I'll probably buy all of these. In fact, I might even buy Altered Beast.
Oh yeah, you gotta see if they have the classic spoken intro.
Wise from the grave and west go my daughter.
Oh, do you want to take this one, or can I take it? Or
you can, and I'll just giggle in the corner.
So we got a trailer for the Heavenly Sword movie, and it basically just looks like the game, which was it a launch title or just like a launch window?
It was a launch window.
A launch window title for PS3, so, you know, early last gen. And, yeah, they actually used art assets from the game, and it's, like, I apparently it had positive reception at the Cannes Film Festival. The Cannes Film Festival. And multiple buyers are interested in releasing the film theatrically in their markets. I'm so amused by this that I can't even talk. I've also had a little wine. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you think otherwise, Captain Spike, but I thought, like, particularly, like, the hair.
It looked very ropey.
Really ropey and very, like...
It's ropey.
Yeah, it's basically like they just rendered in engine.
Yeah.
And made a machinima. 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 I can't talk. Take this one, and you want to talk about it anyways, I'm sure.
Confirmation came recently from Kagoshima Amusement Liberty's Twitter. This is a Japanese arcade center that the arcade version of Ultra Street Fighter 4 is going to be doing its release in Japan in April of 2014.
Game Buoy field trip.
This hasn't yet been confirmed by Capcom, but of course, Kagoshima is a pretty large amusement center. And if they're saying that they are going to have this machine at this date, then it's very likely that they're going to have it at this date. I mean, barring, like, an unforeseen delay or what have you.
Ah. Would you like to take this next one?
Silicon Era ran a really interesting interesting article called Who's in Charge of Atlas Now That Sega Owns It? I'm not going to go into all of the bits and pieces that they discuss, but the TLDR version is that Toshirio Nagoshi-san, whom you are probably familiar with as the creator behind the Yakuza series, as well as Yukio Sugino, also a game director at Sega, and Atlas USA's president, Naoto Hiraoka, are the managing board of Atlas now, which is once again called Atlas, not Sega Dream, as it was briefly being called during restructuring.
Right.
In addition, the previous managing director of Index Corporation, Yukimasa Murakami, will still be the managing director of this new version of the Index Corporation.
That's great. I mean, I was kind of hoping for Nintendo to be the ones to snap them up, but compared to other options, I think Sega is a good home for them. And I'm confident that, you know, we will continue to see the same quality of excellent Atlas games that we have been accustomed to.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree that this is probably a good thing. Basically leaving their bits and pieces intact as they got them, but still putting someone who really understands hardcore games sort of at the helm in terms of Nagoshi-san.
Well, speaking of Atlas and quality games, Devil Survivor 2 Break Record has been delayed until next year, 2014, due to quality issues. They haven't really elaborated on that, but of course Break Record is the enhanced 3DS version of Devil Survivor 2 that they announced earlier this year. We talked about it. It was supposed to be out in July, got delayed until fall, and, you know, I mean, I'm always of the opinion that, who was it who said that, you know, a delayed game...
That was Miyamoto-san.
That's what I thought, that, you know, a delayed game will eventually be good, but a game that's rushed to release will always be bad.
Yeah, and I agree. I do have a lot of concerns about Break Record now. It keeps getting delayed, and I can't help but be fearful. You know, the game was already out. People mostly liked it. Like, what quality issues are you running into just re-releasing it after a quick port to the 3DS? You guys have done this for a game in this series already.
I wonder if it's like 3D causing frame rate issues to drop.
You know, it could be, except I assumed that they would do the same thing they did for the first re-release, which is that it just doesn't have 3D support throughout the game except during the cinemas. And that was fine. I don't think anyone complained, really.
Yeah. We'll be following this, so.
And our last follow-up for the day, we are not familiar yet with the context, so I'm hesitant to call this character a newcomer. However, in the Daily Smash Brothers community on the Wii, you know, where daily Masahiro Sakurai-san uploads new images of the Super Smash Brothers series, Thursday's post had a really interesting screenshot that featured the Wii Fit Trainer fighting a male version of the Wii Fit Trainer.
I thought they were just doing yoga together.
Well, I mean, obviously in the picture, they are both in yoga poses, so they are doing yoga together, strictly speaking. But they're fighting. It's Smash Brothers.
Well, I mean, I can think of a couple possible explanations. It could be that he's an assist trophy for her. You know, the obvious idea is that maybe he's an alternate costume.
Indeed, although typically, Wario aside, characters in the Smash Brothers series don't get alternate costumes.
No.
So there is also a chance that this could be just a new character that is the male Wii Fit Trainer.
True. Well, I know one thing for sure. I'm going to pause the game. You know how you could, like, do the upskirt shots of Princess Peach? I'm going to be zooming in on that yoga pants bulge that he's got.
You want to take a look at that VPL?
Yes, I do.
VPL, for those of you who don't know, stands for Visible Penis Line. The more you know.
And with that, I believe it's time for
news. 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 Oh my god, news.
So, speaking of uploading images to Nintendo communities, Sidekick, I think you have something to say about this one.
Sorry.
And for what do you apologize?
No, not actually, but, you know, Nintendo, you've probably heard this by now, they have terminated the Spot Pass function in Swapnote, which means that you cannot send Swapnotes to your friends online. You can only do it as a Street Pass now, is my understanding. Is that correct?
That's my understanding. Certainly the Street Pass function still works.
The reasoning is that Nintendo has learned that some consumers, including minors, have been exchanging their friend codes on internet bulletin boards and then using Swapnote, known as the Nintendo Letterbox in other regions, to exchange offensive material.
So, you know, real talk here.
That's straight from their announcement on their site.
Oh, I
was clarifying for the listeners.
On another step there, the next line. Nintendo has been investigating ways of preventing this and determined it is best to stop the Spot Pass feature of Swapnote because it allows direct exchange of photos and was actively misused.
Hashtag DickBuoy Extra. Do you think this measure was too extreme in response to nudie shots being sent over the 3DS?
And, you know, I'm going to say, I have to admit, I am a member of a gay Nintendo community online. I will say, I have seen many 3D dongs.
3DDs?
Yeah. Three dongs. It's practically the three dong S. I mean, I would say one day when everyone first got into the nudie moody, that I probably got, like, pictures of 40 different dongs in 3D. If you think about it, that's like 120 dimensions of dong.
That really is. That's basically Super Dong 128. Anyway,
you know, we're being a little silly about this, but in truth, it sucks, but I do get it.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to spend too long talking about this, but do you think it's too extreme a measure? I don't understand why they couldn't have just disabled sending photos or, you know, I mean, I guess because, you know, I did get a lot of drawings of dong from some of our friends and GameBuoy listeners, but, I mean, those were just for LOLs, not to be, like, sexy times. And, you know, the other thing is that anytime you have any sort of camera functionality, like actual camera functionality and a gaming console, people are going to take pics of their tits and dicks. I mean, webcams like Uno. I mean, Uno was famous in the early Xbox 360 days, Xbox Live Arcade, because, you know,
I was going to say, let's clarify that we're talking about the 360 Live Arcade version of Uno.
Well, I mean, I don't
want people to think that, like, the...
Well, maybe in the 70s at key parties, they did strip Uno. Who knows?
You know, they probably did.
They probably did, let's be real, but, you know...
Let's smoke some hashish and get naked.
Specifically...
Draw four!
Draw four, take off four articles of clothing. Anyways, you know, you might remember back in the day, 2006, 2007, that Uno was, for some reason, famous for, if you wanted to see people flash.
You wanted to see boobs or balls, that's
boobs
where you
went. Boobs or balls, good way to put it. I know people, I'm not going to name names, who used the Game Boy camera and Game Boy printer to print out stickers, sticker selfies, sexy sticker selfies. So, you know, it's human. I think it's human nature. I mean, sexting and, you know, camera phones. I mean,
this era of Snapchat.
I mean, it's human nature. And I mean, I understand.
I don't know if it's human nature to take pictures of your wang.
It's human nature to want to be sexually desired in whatever, in the digital age. That means, you know, any exposure that you can get. And I think, you know, a lot more people than they would like to admit have a bit of an exhibitionist streak. This is kind of turning into sexuality buoy.
Well, I was just going to say this isn't human sexuality buoy. Let's get it back on track.
That said, I think that it maybe was a little bit too extreme, but I mean, you know, I guess maybe they determined that they needed to take a measure now. I'd like to see that, you know.
Well, you know what the biggest thing to me is here, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but to me the biggest issue here is that the 2DS launched last week. We have a brand new Pokemon game just hitting where definitely a lot of people are going to be swapping their friend codes online. Lots of new kids are going to be in this infrastructure, and I think that Nintendo just doesn't want to leave the door open to any sort of predator-child relations.
Yeah.
I mean, they've always gone out of their way to prevent these things from happening, and this is just the next step in that. And, you know, I hear people saying, like, oh, well, I want my freedoms, and people's parents should be responsible for keeping their kids away from dicks. And I personally, I mean, I agree with you, certainly. It sucks that we are losing this feature. But at the same time, it's not like I don't have a million other ways to message everyone I message on my 3DS. It's not like if I really need to see pictures of penises that I don't have ways to see pictures of penises, girl. So, it sucks and it's inconvenient, but I get where they're coming from. And especially this holiday season coming up, the last thing you would need is some angry mom going on TV and telling other parents
TV. All I wanted was for my kid to be able to play Super Mario, but then he ended up seeing a woman's vulva in three dimensions.
Yeah, I mean, I guess exactly so. The last thing that Nintendo needs right now, especially with the war they're fighting on several fronts right now in terms of sales, the last thing they need is that level of controversy, and I think that this is a really safe and sensible move for them to make. I don't like it, but I certainly get why they'd do it, and in their shoes, I'd probably do the exact same thing. It's the safe hit. You double down, you know where you're at, and you just reduce your risk as much as you can.
And I mean, you can still, I'm assuming, view 3DS porn.
Oh, yeah.
Through your browser.
I've done that.
So, you know, just upload them to a 3DS porn site, I guess. IDK.
Yeah, no, that's totally a thing.
Game Buoy is not encouraging 3DS porn buoy, but, you know, do as you may.
No, I sort of am. Enjoy sex. Be safe. But make good choices. But have fun.
I'm just saying that we're not soliciting 3D nudies from our listeners.
Next up, we have news that in Japan, one of this year's platinum prizes for Club Nintendo members is a downloadable version of 2008's Advance Wars Days of Ruin.
Mm.
Now, this is extremely, extremely, extremely exciting for a lot of reasons. Of course, first is the fact that Advance Wars Days of Ruin is an original DS game that is going to be distributed as a digital download for 3DS.
Yes.
This is not something we've seen yet, but a lot of people have been clamoring for it. I know that I would certainly love to have downloadable versions of some great out-of-print original DS games.
Right.
Further from that, of course, this game was canceled for release in Japan, so this is a game that Japanese audiences have never gotten. And, you know, obviously there is now some precedent that we could end up seeing more games that we have never seen released here in the U.S., but that have gotten translations released here. Official translations, I mean. You know, stuff like Earthbound Zero.
Yes.
So, and last but most certainly not least, it's also very exciting because Advance Wars is a franchise that a lot of people fear is dead. You know, I say Advance Wars, but this would really be the Famicom Wars series because it's been going for a lot longer than just, you know, the Game Boy Advance era. And, you know, so seeing any action on that front of, you know, a release in that series is sort of a big deal to fans.
Yeah. May I take this one because I have all types of LOLs to say about it?
You absolutely can.
So, Pokemon Company is working on a 3DS detective game starring Pikachu as your partner. It's going to be out in 2015. It was revealed on a Japanese program called The Professionals that was spotlighting Pokemon Company CEO Sunika Ishihara. And the thing that's notable about this is that there's going to be a blue talking Pikachu.
And, Pika, you know, Pika!
Well, no, like talking like Meowth-style talking.
Kill it with fire. Pikachus don't talk.
I mean, the thing is that if...
Is he a shiny?
I don't know. But, I mean, the thing I was thinking about this is that, you know, in Japan, they could obviously just get Ikue Utani-san to do the voice, because, you know, she's done lots of voice acting, and, you know, if you've heard her in series such as Escaflowne, it sounds like Pikachu, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that wouldn't
be so weird.
You're
talking about characters like Meruru.
Exactly, exactly. But, and I'm just wondering, like, does this have any chance of being dubbed? Does Pokemon Company not even care that the idea that, like,
My name's Pikachu.
I'm a Pikachu and I'm just like you.
We should audition for the...
Oh
for
my
the
gosh, right?
My name's Pikachu.
Hashtag Captain Spike for Pikachu 2014.
Hashtag First Mate Sidekick for Pikachu 2015.
Whatever year. I don't think the year matters that much.
Of course, what you may have seen, the context in which you may have seen this, is the motion capture Pikachu, like, laughing, and it just looks frightening.
Well, the game is supposed to also have, you know, facial recognition technology using the 3DS's camera. So that's what that weird photo was supposed to be showing, I thought, was the way that Pikachu was reacting to the face map.
Oh.
But it really just looks like Pikachu's having an O-face.
Ooh, he's using his O-power. Do you want to take this one? It's just about Kinect Sports.
Well, you know, many people thought that it was very interesting that Nintendo was going to be offering the Wii Sports Club software for a free trial and then allowing pay-per-play style gaming after the fact. So many people have been commenting on this, in fact, that it would seem someone at Microsoft must have taken notice, because Kinect Sports Rivals will now have a preseason free trial coming to Xbox One at launch.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a free trial version of the game that will be available when the Xbox One launches on November 22nd, that will allow you to play, you know, different mini-games and monthly challenges until the release of the full game in March 2014.
Indeed. So, to shake things up a bit, Call of Duty Ghosts is going to be including a Alien Horde Extinction Mode. Because, you know, zombies are so cliche these days. They're so 2008.
I'm only including this because I just thought it was neat. We don't really have to talk about it very long. I know Call of Duty, most people don't care. Certainly, I don't even really care.
Does a Call of Duty dog get to go up into space and fight aliens?
Dude, how awesome would that be? It's all fire in the sky style. Like, the dog gets pulled up with a tractor beam and the aliens try to, like, operate on his eye. And the dog's like, oh, hell no! And, like, bites off their hand.
Do you think that that the dog in Call of Duty talks like the talking Pikachu?
I hope so.
Voiced by Chris Rock.
I am a dog and I don't know what's going on.
Let's see, when you're like, oh, hell no! I was assuming it was like Chris Rock or Tracy Jordan. Tracy Morgan. Sorry. So, Trine 2 Complete Story will be available on PS4. It's going to include the previously Wii U exclusive Dwarven Caverns
That's
label?
Dwarven. Are you? You're like Dwarven.
I would say Dwarven Caverns label. Is how I said it. So, you know, Frozenbyte has said that the PS4 version is going to be running at 1080p, 60 frames per second, and stereoscopic 3D support. So, if you haven't played Trine 2 yet, and you're planning on getting a PS4.
It's a pretty cool game. It's always been very pretty. This is going to be super pretty.
Yeah.
We don't yet have a launch window, but we're obviously expecting it in 2014 at some point. And it is going to have stereoscopic 3D support, so
yes.
That's awesome. News on the EA front, Titanfall, previously discussed as only being exclusive to the Xbox One, Xbox 360, and PC for, you know, an exclusivity window of about 6 months to a year, has now been confirmed as exclusive to Xbox One, Xbox 360, and PC for the life of the title.
So they pulled a Ubisoft DLC extra content thing.
Ah, yes, they have. And Vince Zampella, the
sexy sounding name,
the co-founder of Titanfall developer Respawn Entertainment, was tweeting that this announcement by EA was actually the first that he had heard about the Titanfall exclusivity, and implied that they had already done work on a PS4 version. He later clarified that Respawn will develop games on the PS4 platform, and this is an exact quotation, "Of course we will, just not the first Titanfall."
Hmm.
So clearly there's some indication here that they intend on going after that PS4 yeah. audience, and even with other games in the Titanfall series.
Just not the first one. So I wonder if it's like Titanfall Complete or something, so it's like an enhanced version. You know, like the games where it's like a sequel, but it includes like the original game.
Well, hey, that happened for Mass Effect. The PS3 did not have Mass Effect until the Mass Effect trilogy came out, and that was their first exposure to the first Mass Effect game. Prior to that, all they had was the motion comic.
Yeah, or they could have just played that and gotten into the best game. Mass Effect 2 for life, bitches.
Oh, girl, you drunk.
Typing of the Dead Overkill is available on Steam. So this was an unexpected little treat, a little trick-or-treat for you.
At Halloween time,
yeah. So very spoopy, very creepy. It was, of course, the House of the Dead 2 game with, instead of a gun, you're using a keyboard. So it's like Mario teaches typing House of the Dead. I know that Rob Roberts from the Vogue Network, including Orange Lounge Radio and Horde House, was doing a live stream of that, so
was he? I missed that. That's awesome.
I missed it too, but I noticed a tweet that he had made about it. So
Tweet.
So that was among many spoopy titles available on the Steam Halloween scale. Steam Halloween sale. I was going to say scream.
And last,
take this one? Yeah.
But most certainly not least, there's a new Sakura Taisen game! And it has a costume-changing system! Oh yeah, it's a mobile game. Sega has partnered with Mobage to make Sakura Taisen. I think it's MOBA game. It looks like Mobage.
It
because
does,
I'm
but I was thinking about
American.
This earlier.
Yeah, no, it's MOBA game.
MOBA game!
The game will have an original
MOBA
story.
Sounds like a gay dating app.
As a crossover with different characters from the Sakura Taisen series. It has a new gameplay system involving changing clothes, but details on how this will affect gameplay have not yet been announced. Please look forward to it, and if you're in a territory with access to MOBA gay games, you can register early for an ultra-rare Sakura Shinguji card. Please look forward to it.
All right. Well, with that, things are going to get a little dark in here, because it's time for...
Well, I hate to lead us off with such sad, sad news, but Command & Conquer, the revival of the original older strategy series, has been cancelled, and EA has closed developer Victory Games. The cancellation news comes from a post on the game's website, and news of the studio closure came from EA directly in a statement to Game Informer.
Interestingly, the blog post on the game's site was attributed to Victory Studios, but was not approved by the development team.
And in fact, you know, EA has said that they do hope to get the game back on track. But at present, that does not seem to involve any of the original developers. Of course, we here at Game Buoy, our hearts go out to anyone whose job is impacted by this closure. And
I'm sorry for my tasteless joke.
We hope that you can find new employment swiftly. In other sad news, Take-Two sees a net loss of $124 million in quarter two. Of course, you know, it's easy to look at this number and say, good lord, that's a lot of money. But since the end of that quarter, they have had the release of Grand Theft Auto V, along with the activation of the online mode of Grand Theft Auto V. And just so that we're perfectly clear here, strictly speaking, Grand Theft Auto V launched about a week before the end of this quarter that they're reporting for. They just didn't consider the title active in that time because mm-hmm. Grand Theft Auto Online wasn't up yet. And so all sales of that game will be attributed to their quarter three results.
Yeah, I mean,
I expect this to mean that their quarter three results are going to be by far the new high water mark for the company. This will definitely set records in their books, which is probably why they're doing
it. Yeah, the thing that's kind of doomy and gloomy is that quarter two of 2013, they had a net loss of $12.4 million. So this fiscal year, their net loss was 10 times as much. And this fiscal year included, this quarter two of this fiscal year included the Bureau, XCOM Declassified, and Borderlands 2 Game of the Year.
All right, yeah, so I'm not worried long term. Again, I think that this is all just a calculated attempt to have a record-setting high for fiscal quarter three so that their stocks will go up and they can trade at a higher value than they're really worth. But I guess we'll see. I mean, I don't really know all that much about the market. And last, in our dooms and our glooms, but certainly not least,
Vileplume!
On the tail of EA's news about Command & Conquer, we also have news that in the second quarter of fiscal 2014, they reported a $273 million loss.
Yikes!
Yeah. I don't have any real good ways to spin that.
Well, I mean, you know, there was whole college football drama, which is what Joystick discusses, but...
We'll link you to Joystick's article on this at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And, yeah, I certainly hope things stay okay over at EA. You know, they have some titles coming up that I really want to see, and I hope that they don't have to do any more studio closures.
Indeed.
With that, we are going to take a very brief break. For us, it's going to be about 5 minutes. And for you guys, probably 5 seconds. Thank you for listening, and we'll be right back.
Sonic!
Well, alright, Slagkick, I know that you're preparing to lead the discussion on an episode coming later this month on Pokemon. I am handing you the cheer stick that you might lead this discussion now on Sonic the Hedgehog, since I know you put together this lovely roll of show notes for us. Why don't you lead the discussion? I'll chirp in as I can in the usual first mate position. And for this conversation only, you can be the captain of the SS Game Buoy.
Aw, you're going to chirp in like a flicky?
I don't know what that means, and I refuse to acknowledge it.
A flicky? You know, the little birds from the Sonic games?
Yes.
Really? No, thank you. You know, Sonic is a series that I have a lot of love for, and you know, we wanted to talk about Sonic today because over the past few years he's kind of come back into a positive light, I would say. You know, Sonic Lost World just hit just this week, so I haven't had a chance to play it yet. I know you have, Captain Spike, but I would say that things are definitely looking up for Sonic these days.
I absolutely would. You know, I'm a big fan. We have Sonic Lost Worlds hit recently, and we'll talk about that a little later, but I definitely think that the series is in a good place.
Yeah, so, you know, we figured it was a good time to take a look back at the little blue hedgehog who's
just I think we call him the Blue Blur.
Someone's been reading too much fanfic.
Oh!
So, you know, just really briefly, I want to talk about the genesis of Sonic. Get it?
Ba-dum-ts.
You know, Alex Kidd used to be the mascot of Sega, but in 1990, Sega ordered their in-house development studio to develop a game with a new mascot. And a team led by Yuji Naka, Naoto Oshima, and Hirokazu Yasuhara, I'm horrible at Japanese names, formed what became Sonic Team. And, you know, the rest is history. So I want to start by talking about the original Sonic the Hedgehog. It was released in 1991 for the Mega Drive and Genesis, developed by Sonic Team. And, I mean, this just really, I think, you know, the success of this game really allowed Sega to enjoy the success that they had in the 90s. I don't think Sonic had been such a smash hit that Sega would have nearly enjoyed the level of success that they did and, you know, really been the kind of the force in the industry that they became.
Oh, I don't think that can even be discussed. I think that without question, you know, the Genesis was doing well if you look at it in sort of retrospective historical perspectives. You know, the Genesis was doing all right on the back of its very aggressive ad campaign. I would call it a smear campaign, frankly. But, you know, the very successful arcade ports of games such as Altered Beast and Strider, and really bringing to home a level of graphic and gameplay fidelity that consumers weren't really used to, the Genesis was already doing pretty well. But then again, as you say, Sonic really just knocked it to a whole nother level.
Like a blockbuster. We're talking, you know, I mean, like you said, there's no way to tell what could have happened, but I mean, I really could imagine things having played out differently for Sega had Sonic not been such a huge success early on in the 90s. You know, it would have maybe been a couple more years before they had seen a blockbuster that really brought them up, or maybe just had been a little, like, niche console-ish. But, you know, one thing that was pretty revolutionary for the time was that Sonic really kind of brought this idea of momentum-based physics into platform gaming. And, I mean, you know, all platform gaming has a certain level of physics, but, you know, Sonic was really about gotta go fast. And, you know, with the bumpers and the loop-de-loops, I mean, it was just really, it was unlike anything else we had seen to that point, I would argue. And, I mean, you know, I was a little younger when Sonic 1 came out. I don't know what your background with Sonic 1 was, your initial impressions.
Well, I don't want this, I don't want to dominate the conversation. This is your conversation today. But, you know, I grew up, I was a Nintendo kid. I did not initially have a Genesis. I did get one, and then I got another and another. So ultimately, I had many Genesises over the years.
But Genesis?
Genesis. Genocide. Wait, that sounds like genocide.
No.
Have we made this joke before on Game Buoy?
I don't think so.
So, you know, one of the neighbor kids in my neighborhood had a Genesis, and, you know, we were not actually particularly good friends. But he would let me come over and play his Genesis.
So you used him for his Genesis?
No, I mean, there was a mutual dislike. Like, it wasn't like I was using him, like, pretending to like him. Like, no, we went on not liking each other, but we'd play games at each other's houses so that he could play my Super Nintendo and I could play his Genesis.
Ah, interesting.
So, and, you know, I really got into it. Sonic 1 in particular, you know, I really enjoyed the tension in the game design at that point, water levels in particular, you know, as opposed to Mario, where in the water levels back then, you know, you could just swim eternally forever until the level timer went out, Sonic would have to come back to the surface to breathe. And as a gameplay conceit for the time, this was not a normal part of game design. Like, oh, I have to worry about my character's oxygen levels right now?
Right. And I mean, you know, we think of Sonic as gotta go fast, but I mean, really, even in this earliest game in the franchise, he didn't go as fast as he did in later games, I would argue. And I mean, some of that was probably due to level design, but you know, a lot of it was still like really solid platforming. We were talking earlier today about the Marble Zone, had some, you know, really, you know, required a lot of timing. I mean, maybe not to the level that, like, a game like Mega Man is, like, built on the timing of your platforming, but, you know, still, I thought it was good level design, you know, great music, despite the FM synthesizer on the Genesis, which we often make fun of. You know, that said, I think that the Sonic music was less offensive than some of the uses of the FM synthesizer on the Genesis.
Oh, absolutely. That music, I dare say, has gone on to become iconic.
Well, yeah, that was, people might be familiar with Dreams Come True, the J-pop band. And that's because Dreams Come True's band leader, Masato Nakamura, was the composer
for
Sonic 1 and Sonic 2, which we'll get to in a minute, of course. And like you said, iconic Green Hill Zone, even, I mean, I remember, like, Starlight Zone, which both Green Hill and Starlight Zone were also reused, like, the music assets were, not music assets, but, you know, the melody and stuff were used for Dreams Come True songs. So, that kind of led to a trend that we will explore a little later of popular music in Sonic games, which, you know, is kind of different from somebody like Koji Kondo, who, you know, specifically was making these Mario melodies, you know. Do you have anything else to say about Sonic 1?
I really want to point out how many times this game has been ported and emulated.
Right, I was going to get to the ports in a minute, but go ahead.
Very specifically because, aside from the WiiWare Virtual Console release, I don't think this game has ever been properly replicated up until extremely recently on the 3DS and for this ground-up iOS remake.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the first real emulation of this game that comes to mind would be Sonic Jam on the Sega Saturn. But then I look at things like the Dreamcast Genesis Collection and... you know, these ports, they all come to mind
there's
because
a GBA port.
The sound is really quite horrendous in all of these. Just absolute, really poor sound emulation for whatever reason. That's all I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, interesting. You know, one thing that really struck me coming from, like, a Super Mario background was the idea of, you know, best endings. You know, if you didn't get all the Chaos Emeralds, you get Robotnik being LOL at you. I should say Eggman, you know, that's a controversy that we'll maybe explore a little later. But, yeah, you know, like, so, I mean, you know, it wasn't anything I would say that was, like, brand new to gaming at that point. But, you know, for me, it was kind of like, oh, you know, I need to go back and replay this. So, I mean, it added a sense of replay value that I had not experienced personally until then.
Excellent.
So, ports. In 2006, it came out for the GBA and the Wii Virtual Console. 2007 for iOS and Xbox Live Arcade, 2013 for Android. And so what would you say until...
Of course, you know, there was also the Saturn port, as mentioned.
Right.
On the Sonic Jam disc. There was the Dreamcast Genesis collection. That also had it. Heavens, it's, you know, it's available on Steam, and obviously that's a reasonably well-emulated version. So this game, you know, you can really play it just about anywhere, which obviously is a real asset.
Yeah, yeah. Now, things really started to blow up.
There was also...
Oh, go ahead. And see, you know, I was actually going to devote a little time at the end to talk about the compilations and what was available on them. But, you know, as you... Because for me, like,
so stuff
I don't
like
have that memory, so...
Stuff like the Sonic Classic Collection on DS, which, by the way, is abysmal and everyone should be encouraged not to touch. We'll talk about that later, then.
No one said you could touch, or no one said you should touch.
Okay, well, if we'll discuss that later, then let's move on.
All right, well, things. I feel like things really started to blow up with Sonic 2, which was released here on November 24th, 1992... affectionately called Sonic Tuesday. This was developed by the Sega Technical Institute. And Sega Technical Institute is kind of an interesting, I don't want to say side note, but, you know, for Sonic Team, now, this is an interesting note because Sega Technical Institute was located here in the U.S. It did have members from Sonic Team involved, but, you know, we'll kind of get into... When we talk about Sega Sonic CD and Sonic 3, there's really, you know, kind of like two differing East versus West visions for Sonic, and it was like really a rivalry and a controversy.
Well, and you know, it's funny, and we may not get too much into this here today, but I suspect when we do an episode that's really Sega focused, we'll talk
about how
the schism that formed here, sort of the cracks in the facade between Sega's, you know, West arm and East arm, these sort of ultimately founded the demolition and disintegration of Sega as an entity.
Yeah. Basically, what to take away from it in the context of Sonic is that Yuji Naka was not happy with the rigid policies at Sega Japan, so he's like, smell you later, bitches. I'm out of here. And he went to the U.S. and formed Sega Technical Institute.
And that gets more complex from here, but we'll come back to that a little later in this episode.
Just a few other notes that Masato Nakamura, once again, did the music. The ending song for Sonic 2 was made into a Dreams Come True song. But, of course, what most people probably associate with Sonic 2 is Tails. Now, you're a big fan of Tails, aren't you, Captain Spike?
Mr. Prowler, I am.
Miles, Tails, per hour. Prowler.
So you per don't hour. You don't say Tails in that context because you missed the pun? It's Miles Prowler?
No, I know it's Miles. I know his name is Miles Prowler. Miles per hour. Get it? But I remember seeing his name listed as Miles, Tails, per hour. Anyways, Captain Spike does not actually like Tails at all.
No, I mean, I like Tails a lot in the context of Sonic 2. I loved, from a mechanic perspective, you know, adding two-player split-screen platforming was like a revelation.
Right, right.
So from a gameplay perspective, which is, you know, all that I really care about, I actually quite love Tails having different abilities.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because...
These were big deals, especially in my neighborhood. Literally, kids would be lined up outside of other kids' houses.
I want to play Tails,
gets to play just two-player next.
Uh-huh.
You know, do I like Tails in the Sonic canon? Well, no, but I don't like anyone in the Sonic canon
like
other
Tails
than Sonic,
Sonic
and Knuckles.
Fanfic?
I'd have to read it again.
Ah! So, I'm glad you brought it up, though, because the two-player versus mode was a first for the series, which, you know, was still beginning. But I love the two-player versus mode. You went through Casino Night, Mystic Cave, Mystic Cavern. I don't exactly remember the name of it off the top of my head. Green Hill, and I feel like there was one other one that you could do. And I just love to play that. You know, it was basically like a speed run through the level. And there were some cool power-ups unique to that mode, like the one that would swap your places, so you could really screw up your friend, or in my case, my sister, you know, by, like, warping places with them. And I had a lot of fun with that. You know, I would often, because, you know, Sonic took a while to, you know, get through all the levels. Sonic 2 was much bigger than Sonic 1. Sonic 1 only having 6 main levels. So, you know, if you only had a little bit of time, you're like, oh, I just want to play some two-player versus. Then, you know, that was a lot of fun. Going back and looking at Tails, you know, he wasn't really, in terms of the main game, a fully functional two-player co-op, in my opinion. Like, he was, but, you know, like, his flying definitely was not developed and was very, like, kind of wonky AI control.
Well, I mean, if you were playing with a second player, then you could actually have some really good flying support.
Yeah, but, I mean, I would say that when we talk about Sonic 3, that was really vastly improved.
Maybe. I don't know that I don't, from a functional two-player perspective, think that it's that different between 2 and 3.
I always thought it was a little bit, but... Hashtag GameBuie Extra. Do you think that Tails had a significantly enhanced role in Sonic 3? Of course, one big, big, big change was the spin dash, which, I mean, is like Sonic's iconic move. And, I mean, I think that really also helped speed up the momentum of the gameplay. And, you know, just really when you go back and play Sonic 1 on pretty much anything until we get to play the 3D version, which they added the spin dash to, you really do notice it doesn't detract from Sonic 1, but you're just kind of like, man, I just wish I could spin dash. I mean, for me, I just remember, like, you know, the noticing a huge difference. One thing I also really remember at the time is that in, like, GamePro and, like, the other big magazines at the time, gaming magazines, that takes you back, doesn't it? There was a lot of content that they showed prior to the release that eventually got removed. And, you know, if you go into the debug mode and listen to sound checks and stuff, you can still, I believe, hear some assets from that. But there was the Dust Hill Zone and the Hidden Palace Zone were the two that you most often hear about. And, you know, you can look on Sonic fan sites if you're interested in more about that.
Yeah. I remember, like, watching Nick Arcade.
Yes.
And, you know, they would... This was a game show, for those of you who don't remember it, from the early 90s. Kids would compete on this game show. There would be video game challenges. And you would see sometimes games that either were not ever released or games that were pre-released as promo by publishers. And, you know, occasionally these video game challenges would come up, and, you know, the kids would pick which game they felt most proficiently they could compete at. As a result, you very rarely saw them pick these pre-release or unreleased games. But every now and then, the camera would focus on an unreleased or pre-released
game
for long enough that you could see footage of areas that don't exist in the final games, or just footage of a game that otherwise doesn't exist at all.
Mm-hmm.
And Sonic 2 is really most known for having had a pre-release beta that did have, most in particular, the Hidden Palace Zone. I think prior to the beta ROM being discovered, most of the data we had about that area was from clips of Nick Arcade,
yeah.
As I recall.
And I don't quote me on this, but I think that one episode that definitely has Sonic 2 beta played as one of the challenges was when the cast of Clarissa Explains It All did like a celebrity version where they played for charity. I believe that they played Sonic 2.
You know, if I was a grumpy man, I would imply that the reason we saw a cast of celebrities, because they're just on Nickelodeon, picking a risky game like that in their competition is because if they lose, it's not like they're not winning money themselves. Like, this money's going to charity, so they can afford to make risky choices in their game challenges.
Yeah. One last thing that I think is kind of notable about Sonic 2 is that was the first appearance of Super Sonic, which, as you know, if you have all the Chaos Emeralds, you can transform. You're, like, super invincible, and it eats up your rings, but it's super awesome. You basically go Super Saiyan. I mean, I'm not personally sure if that was specifically meant as an homage to Super Saiyan, because it was contemporaneous with Dragon Ball Z.
It seems impossible to me that it could be merely coincidence that they both have form changes where their hair becomes yellow and super spiky, and their eyes turn blue as they emanate energy.
Right, right.
It's just too specific.
Mm-hmm. And, other than that, we haven't really talked about the special stages, because, I mean, I don't think that the special stages in any significant way really are worth talking about. You know, Sonic 1 had the one where you were kind of... Sonic 1's special stage was kind of cool, where, you know, you had to jump through the ring at the end of the stage, and you had to go through kind of like the tilty thing to get to the Chaos Emerald, and there were, like, end bumpers. Sonic 2's was a, like, ring-collecting, racy thing with, like, pseudo-3D effects, blast processing. And, you know, you had to get a certain number of rings before each checkpoint to get the Chaos Emerald. I don't think I have too much to say about either of those, but,
Yeah.
Super Sonic! So, among other places, I believe the first port for this was on Japanese mobiles in 2006. Came out for 2007 on Wii Virtual Console and Xbox Live Arcade, and 2010 for the iOS. And, of course, available on many different compilations.
And we're not talking about compilations here.
I just figured we'd kind of list off the compilations at the end,
okay,
unless you
fine.
Feel otherwise.
No, that's fine.
One that in some ways has been kind of the black sheep of the series in a lot of ways is Sonic the Hedgehog CD, released in 1993 for the Mega CD, aka the Sega CD, developed by Sonic Team. So this one was developed in conjunction with, well, I don't know, in conjunction is really the proper way to say it, you know, more in competition with, in a lot of ways, Sonic 2. And it's a vastly different game. I mean, it's still a Sonic game, it's still a platformer, gotta go fast. But, you know, there's no Tails. So, I mean, like, you know, they're like, no, we're not having any of that BS. One of the things that I really love about Sonic CD is the time travel. You know, you would go back to the past, and the, you know, art assets would look totally different. You know, it'd be like, in some cases, just like a palette swap, but, you know, you go back in the past, and what you did in the past could affect a future. You had good future, bad future. And these all had, like, you know, different looks, different music tracks. And I just thought it was a really spectacular game. I'm not of the opinion that Sonic 2 or Sonic CD is, like, either one is better. I probably would actually prefer Sonic CD, personally, just because it's such a spectacular game. But, you know, I'm not at the expense of, oh, Sonic 2 is crap, you know? He could not... Oh, wait, can Sonic do a spin dash? Because I know he does the super peel out. But does he still do the spin dash in CD? Or does the super peel out replace it? I haven't played Sonic CD in a couple years.
I haven't played Sonic CD since the Sega CD release.
Really?
Yeah, I have never played any of the ports of it.
I thought you picked it up for Steam. There was a Steam release, right?
I did, but that doesn't mean I played it.
One thing that you might remember from Sonic CD is the animated cutscenes by Toei Animation. And, you know, it kind of showed him racing along to the Little Planet, I think it was called, or whatever, or the Lost Planet. No, not Lost Planet, that's a different game. It also, of course, being a Sega CD game, had some vocal music. In Japan, they had Toot Toot Sonic Warrior, and then in America, they had Sonic Boom, Sonic Boom, Sonic Boom. And I actually bring that up because,
Sonic Boom, Sonic Boom.
For the next game that I'm going to talk about, there was a pre-order bonus at Toys R Us, which was the Sonic CD soundtrack with also a couple tracks, rearrangements of tracks from Sonic Spinball, which we'll talk about later. This got a port... I want you to be able to chime in.
I don't have a lot to say about it. I love the time travel mechanic. Mm-hmm. I love the
Introduced Amy Rose. Yeah. Sorry.
Ew.
Sorry, Internet.
I love Sonic CD. I think it's a real work of art. I think that it's a great step back from Sonic 2, back to the sort of more platformy, labyrinthine, exploratory level designs of Sonic 1, rather than all of these courses that are designed to impel you forever forward. There's a lot of, there's a lot more vertical movement, exploration. There's a lot of, bottomless pits or what have you. Again, to encourage not playing recklessly.
Right.
So I really liked Sonic CD. I just don't have a lot to say about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, this got a port in 1995 for Windows CD-ROM and 2011 for Android. And I believe that's also the year that the Steam port came out. And the Steam port was really more, it was rebuilt from the ground up in a lot of ways, wasn't it?
Yes.
And I mean, I think, had we talked about that? I don't know, that might have been on pre-Game Buoy that we were talking about that.
Possibly.
So, one other game that I think did vertical level design well, and just was, I just have so much to say about this game. I love it so much, and I'm of course talking about Sonic 3, Sonic the Hedgehog 3, which was released here in the United States on February 2nd, 1994, affectionately known as Hedgehog Day. I once wrote a piece for a friend's geek culture site about this, and I'm pretty sure that I've told the story before on various podcasts.
But it's time to tell it on Game Buoy.
It is. I might have told it on Game Buoy before, but you're hearing it again because it's relevant.
Go for it.
Of course, I had pre-ordered this at Toys R Us, as I had mentioned.
As you do back then.
As you do back then, you go get the little, pre-order slip from the pouch, bring it up to the cashier and all that. Good times. And so, I got the pre-order bonus, which was the Sonic CD and Sonic Spinball soundtrack. Now, the day of release, Hedgehog Day, my sister back then was on, the 5th grade basketball team, or 6th grade, whatever grade she was in there. And, she was actually a pretty good basketball player, and she had a game that day. I think it was, her first game or something. So it was, her first game after going to basketball practice. And I was like, no, Mom, it's Hedgehog Day. I need to get my copy of Sonic 3. So I convinced my mom to take me to Toys R Us, which the local Toys R Us for me was, about a half hour away because I lived in the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
And we missed my sister's game because I was taking Sonic 3. So that's my Sonic 3 story. Do you have any Hedgehog Day stories?
I don't have any Hedgehog Day stories.
20 years of Hedgehog Day is coming in February.
I did not buy my own copy of Sonic 3. I was kind of over Sonic by this point.
Interesting. Because, see, this was the height of my Sonic mania. Of course, I am a lifelong Nintendo fanboy, but I was in, full Sega mode in 1994. Sonic 3 was developed by Sega Technical Institute, and there's just a lot of interesting development stuff going on with this. It originally began as a 3D isometric game. That idea would evolve into Sonic 3D Blast, which we'll talk about a little later. It introduced a lot of things. You could play as the badass Knuckles the Echidna. You had the option to play as Tails only. You could save your game Or was that only in Sonic and Knuckles? No, you could save it in,
you could save in Sonic 3.
It's just you got more slots to save.
Exactly so.
And see, I feel like the two-player co-op with Tails was enhanced by, the need to kind of tweak how he controls and flies for single-player Tails mode. And what was really interesting when we, talk about Knuckles, oh, wait, you couldn't play as Knuckles yet. Oops, I'm getting ahead of myself. Well, because the thing is that, of course, Sonic 3 and Sonic and Knuckles were initially supposed to be one game.
Yeah, and rather very clearly.
Just because of, you know, development costs and time and release windows, blah, blah, blah. You know, they split it up into two. But I remember seeing levels on the Happy Meal bag for Sonic 3 that were not in the game, that were later in Sonic and Knuckles. I think it was like, you know, the one in Sonic and Knuckles where you're in, like, the aircraft or something? It was that level, like the Flying Battery Zone, I think it's called.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. You know, we were talking about the NIC Arcade connection for Sonic 2. But for Sonic 3 / Sonic and Knuckles, just a lot of gaming mags, even like Sega Visions and Electronic Gaming Monthly, were running a lot of art from these games. Of areas early on that would not appear in the game proper until the Sonic and Knuckles lock-on cartridge came out. And, mm-hmm. you know, there were even hints just in Sonic 3 in the level select cheat menu that referenced some of the Sonic and Knuckles stuff. So
right.
That's sort of a very interesting situation there, and I can understand why you would get mixed up. I'm sorry, continue.
And I mentioned that Knuckles, I think he's badass. He's honestly my favorite Sonic character. Even though he looks nothing like an echidna, which of course is a spiny anteater for people who maybe didn't know that, but I feel like video game nerds know what an echidna is because of Knuckles. I certainly did. And I actually did a report for school. It was like an animal report. I did it on an echidna. I did it on an echidna. Ooh. Only if it's Knuckles.
Girl, keep it moving.
Anyway, another thing that I wanted to bring up is that the two-player versus mode was a little different from Sonic 2. The were all original stages designed just for the two-player mode, and they were based on laps instead of, you know, just going through the level. So I liked it, but I kind of prefer Sonic 2's two-player versus. I don't know how you feel, Captain Spike.
Again, you know, unlike most people, I don't have super strong feelings on Sonic 3. I do, in retrospect, recognize that it's a superb game. It just, for whatever reason, at the time, it didn't capture me.
Interesting, because, I mean, I thought the music was great, and the music is an interesting bullet point, because
I did get quite into it after the release of Sonic & Knuckles.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a cartridge of Sonic & Knuckles before I ever had a cartridge of Sonic 3. I'd have to borrow other people's copies of Sonic 3 in order to play, like, the Sonic 3 and Knuckles stuff.
Right, right, which I will have a lot to say
about. You know,
about.
I appreciate that we're discussing these as two separate games, but for the sake of brevity, I think that we should just start talking about them both as one game.
True, but I do want to talk about...
Then make your point, girl.
I want to talk about Sonic 3 and Michael Jackson. Now, you probably heard a lot about this.
Ow!
I'm not going to get too much into it, I'm going to link you to a feature on GameTrailers.com. It's called Pop Fiction. It's a little,
it's basically webisode. Mythbusters for games.
I was going to say it's like Snopes for games, but also yes. And they did a really nice, expose of this, and they went as far as, you know, looking into interviews and then tracking these people down, trying to, you know, determine what was true, because there were, like, different versions of the story. Some people said that Michael Jackson left the game because of the whole controversy behind, well, child abuse, well, sexual abuse.
Allegations?
Yes, yes. The allegations. But other sources seemed to think that it was because Michael Jackson was not happy with the sounds produced by the FM synthesis chip in the Genesis, and that he did not want his name attached to something that did not reflect the full potential of his music.
And let's be clear here. I'm not going to pontificate or speculate on either of these facts. or, you know, supposed facts. I'm just going to say Michael Jackson, in terms of his music, was a perfectionist.
Yes.
And if the FM chip didn't sound the exact way he wanted it to sound, I do see a circumstance where that alone for him, again, being a perfectionist, would have been cause to have discarded these compositions as such.
I definitely encourage you, Captain Spike, and all our listeners who are interested in this little piece of history.
Girl, I saw that shit like 2 years ago.
You might have been thinking of the YouTube video, because I think this one just came out this year. Still think it's a very interesting watch.
No, it definitely is.
Sonic 3 by itself got ports to the Wii Virtual Console in 2007 and 2009 for Xbox Live Arcade. And I believe the Xbox Live Arcade version allows you to lock on, but I'm not sure about Wii Virtual Console. Do you know?
I believe that they do.
Interesting. Well, we need to talk about Sonic & Knuckles now. It was released 6 months later in October of 1994, also by Sega Technical Institute, because it's basically Sonic 3 Part 2, before Sonic 4 Part 1 and Part 2 was a thing. Of course, the big, big, big thing about Sonic & Knuckles was the lock-on technology, which basically added in the extra content that was supposed to be in Sonic 3, back into the game. So it also could be a standalone game. And the thing that was really cool about it is that you could also play as Knuckles in Sonic 2, complete with like alternate routes. I mean, Sonic 3 and Knuckles, which is what you call when you lock it on. Sonic 3 and Knuckles had, you know, alternate paths for Knuckles, because that was designed that way, like from the ground up. But I really thought it was cool how he integrated with Sonic 2, because, you know, Knuckles could glide and climb walls, and there's, like, places in, like, the chemical plant zone in Sonic 2 where you can just skip entire parts by gliding and climbing, and it's so cool. I really like the way that Knuckles controlled. But, I mean, of course, Sonic 3 and Knuckles was the, you know, main reason for the lock-on technology. And, I mean, I think of it as the ultimate version of the game, because it was meant to be that way. It's one of my favorite games of all time. I'm not going to lie.
Fascinating.
Oh, also, if you locked in Sonic 1, you could play the Blue Sphere stages, which is the special stages in Sonic 3, Sonic & Knuckles, Sonic 3 & Knuckles, were like a 3D isometric blue sphere stage where you had to try and collect all the blue spheres.
That was actually my personal favorite.
I actually loved it. It was pretty challenging. In Sonic 3, you know, got the Chaos Emeralds. In Sonic and Knuckles, you got Hyper Emeralds. And this allowed you to, I believe they're called Super Emeralds, but you turned into Hyper Sonic or Hyper Knuckles. Tails did not get a Hyper form. And the interesting thing is that, I believe that Tails' Tails' game ends, like, before the final level. I'm not sure about Knuckles. I never got to the end with Knuckles, but, you know, Sonic's game goes a little bit further, so I always thought that was a little interesting. And, kind of in the spirit of the time, like we were talking about Nick Arcade, Blockbuster and MTV paired up to hold a tournament at Alcatraz Island. You might know that Sonic 3 had the Angel Island Zone, which was like island-based, so I was like, ooh, it's like Angel Island, although Angel Island is also an island in San Francisco, so LOL. But
I had always assumed that intentional, you know, Sega was located in San Francisco at the time.
Right.
In fact, they still have offices there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, in this capacity, yeah. I love this game. The music is great. Like, the Ice Cap Zone is one of my favorite chiptunes of all time. You know, I just really thought that it returned to, like, what Captain Spike was saying about the vertical platforming. I thought the level design was a big improvement over Sonic 2. And that's why I say, you know, I don't dislike Sonic 2, but I think Sonic 3 and Knuckles outshadows it in so many ways. And just really a fantastic game. Really, I believe, the pinnacle of Sonic's 2D platforming experience, in my opinion. But, you know, do you have anything to add?
I don't suspect so. Funny enough, I got more out of Blue Sphere than I think I, like, using the Sonic 1 cartridge than I think I did out of Sonic 3 proper.
Oh, that disappoints me. Now, this came out in 2009 as a port for Xbox Live Arcade and Wii Virtual Console. So, interestingly, you had to wait 2 whole years if you were playing Sonic 3 on Virtual Console. I'm not sure if it was for, like, lock-on reasons. Like I said, I apologize for not being familiar. I haven't played Sonic and Knuckles on Virtual Console. At the time, I was buying all the Sonics on Xbox Live Arcade for whatever reason. So that's kind of just what I continued to do. Sonic and Knuckles in 3. So at this point, we kind of get into an interesting twist in the Sonic road, so to speak. So in 1994 is when Saturn was released, Sega Saturn. And I want us to devote a little time towards the end of our discussion to talk about canceled games, because I think in the case of Sonic, it's kind of interesting, some of the canceled titles. But long story short, there was a Sonic game in development for Saturn, but that ended up ultimately being canceled. We'll talk about it a little later. And so, you know, they kind of needed to, you know, get some more Sonic out there. And what they ended up doing was taking the game that was originally the prototype for Sonic 3, and that turned into Sonic 3D Blast. Now, that came out towards the end of 1996. It was developed by Traveler's Tales, actually. So that's kind of a neat side note. You know, a lot of people might not realize that. It had 3D isometric gameplay. It was known as Sonic 3D Flicky's Island in Japan and Europe, because your goal was to go through, collect flickies, and then put them through the little portal. And when we talk about spin-off games, it actually pulled a little bit from Sega Sonic the Hedgehog, which I'll tell you more about that when we talk about spin-offs. But so it was kind of interesting to see it grow from that idea as well as the Sonic 3 prototype. And I remember it being kind of controversial at the time. People, you know, were like, where's Sonic 4? And of course we didn't get Sonic 4 until much, much later. But I liked it. You know, I don't think I would play it over, like, a Sonic 3 if I had the choice, but from what I know, you're pretty fond of Sonic 3D Blast, aren't you, Captain Spike?
You know, I am. It's like, okay, so Sonic 3D Blast came out in a very particular time in my life. I was unable to purchase new games at all for a couple of years for socioeconomic reasons. And that's a fancy way of saying that I was poor for a little while as a child. But we did have Sega Channel.
I
wasn't
yeah.
able to buy new games or rent new games from Blockbuster for a window of time. All of my games budget and allowance and what have you all went to getting me Sega Channel. And Sonic 3D Blast was on Sega Channel in this very weird way. They split the game up into two parts and would only ever have, like, the first half of the game or the second half of the game up at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd get a password to unlock the second half. So, like, if you hadn't finished the first half, you couldn't access the second half. You'd have to have a password to access it. So I would inevitably forget to write down my password, and I'd end up playing through these games, these two different halves of Sonic 3D Blast. I probably played through each of them more than 30 times.
Mm.
Just because, you know, as you do when you have a limited number of games to play and you don't have a password to unlock this really bizarre configuration to access this content. I ended up resultantly playing these games a lot. And while I initially thought Sonic 3D Blast was ass and awful and I was just playing it for the sake of playing it, I eventually came to really figure out where everything hidden in the game was, and learning all of the level layouts and what have you. I ended up falling quite fond of it.
It was a charming little game. Now, this also received a Saturn port, which I think was also in 1996. It was ported in 7 weeks, so it would have had to have been, because they wanted to make up for Sonic Extreme, which, again, we'll touch on a little later. In 1997, it got a Windows port. The Saturn and PC versions have a little bit better texture work, and the Windows version let you save your progress, so that's kind of cool. Like you said, it was available on Sega Channel, And it also received a 2007 Virtual Console release and a Steam release in 2010. So kind of, I guess if anything was the black sheep of the Sonic platforming series, it would really be 3D Blast, because it had really, at the time, got a lot of mixed reviews, and I think fans just were kind of like not here for it, but I thought it was cool. I enjoyed it. And after that, because of this game Sonic Extreme being canceled, it was a while before we saw another proper Sonic platformer, and that came in the form of 1999's Dreamcast release Sonic Adventure, launch title for the Dreamcast. Was it launch title in Japan, too, or just for...
No, it was launched both in Japan and in the U.S., and I remember this very specifically because I was at an anime convention the week that the Dreamcast came out in Japan. And it was a big deal that one of the gaming booths, had a Dreamcast out on a little, like, 13-inch, like, super tiny, like, little portable CRT TV, and it was playing the attract mode for Sonic Adventure on loop. Mm. And, you know, Amanda, whom will someday be on this program, so keep that name in mind for those of you out there in Internet Radio Land, as well as Seawolf Jason and I, we just crowded around this little TV, and we must have watched that opening play 5 or 6 times. In fact, if not for the fact that they were asking a substantial amount more money than it should rightfully have been to purchase this unit, I would have bought it then and there. But again, we were just a year off of the U.S. release. It didn't make sense to take the plunge there.
Yeah. So it came out on $99.99, Dreamcast launch day. Day that we will always remember. It also received... I'm going to do the ports first, just to kind of get that out of the way.
It received a
port for GameCube in 2003. It got a Windows port also in 2003. And then Xbox Live Arcade, PlayStation Network came out in 2010. And the OnLive service had it in 2012. At this point, had moved on to PlayStation and N64, and so I kind of really... I didn't have a Dreamcast, so I honestly didn't get to play it until much later. I liked it, but I feel like, Captain Spike, you have a lot more to say. This is kind of my dark period in Sonic fandom, I suppose. So, what were your impressions at the time and now of Sonic Adventure?
So, the thing to keep in mind here is that I loved Sonic Adventure. I still do. I still think it's superb. You know, I own so many different ports. I own the GameCube port. I own the disc-based 360 port. I own the download version.
On 360?
Well, there was a download version as well, but there was also a disc that had that Space Shuttle 5 Part 2.
Right.
Crazy Taxi
and Sega
Super
Tennis.
Black Bass, I think. Or whatever the Sega Pro Vision was.
Oh, for some reason I thought it was like Sega Tennis or something. Anyway, please continue.
So I really liked this game. You know, the Dreamcast came out September 9th, 1999. And this was, you know, my senior year of high school. I had a lot going on at this point in my life. I got that and Soul Calibur 2, I said Soul Calibur 2, but it was Soul Calibur 1, my bad.
Was it Soul Calibur 2 in Japan, but Soul Calibur 1
oh,
here?
Oh, no, it was the second game in the Soul series.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But it's Soul Calibur 1, the sequel to Soul Edge / Soul Blade.
Exactly.
In any event, this isn't an episode on Soul Calibur.
This isn't Soul Calibur Buoy tonight.
See, I didn't make the Soul Calibur Buoy joke because there's a chance we may do a Soul Calibur episode at some point.
That's why I said tonight.
But this isn't that. but, you know, I would routinely, every day, come home from school. Sometimes I would have to be at school rather very late that year again because senior year and you know how these things go. But the first thing I would do every day is sit down immediately in front of my TV, turn on the Dreamcast, and play Sonic the Hedgehog, Sonic Adventure, of course. I did everything in that game. I did all of the supersonic stuff. I collected all of the emblems. I played the Big the Cat levels over and over. I love Big the Cat. Like, people hate Big the Cat.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
I've
seen your Big the Cat cosplay that you've only shown to, like, 3 people in the entire world.
That's not a real thing.
Damn it.
So, yeah, no, I'm a big fan. I think it's a superb game even now. I still think, in a lot of ways, it's the best 3D Sonic game that was made. It had its sections that were just gotta go fast. But it also had a lot of exploration and a lot of vertical and horizontal exploration.
Yeah.
You know, just a lot of the things that I liked about the early Sonic games is present there in Sonic Adventure, just in 3 dimensions. I think it's a superb mixture of where 3D platforming was at the time,
mm-hmm.
as with the sensibilities of the Sonic series.
Yeah, I mean, if you kind of think of it contemporaneously, to a degree, within a couple years of Super Mario 64, Legend of Zelda Ocarina of
Crash
Time.
Crash Bandicoot. I mean,
I was thinking more of 2D franchises jumping into 3D specifically.
Okay, okay. I thought you were just talking about 3D platforming,
well, yeah.
Where that paradigm
well,
was.
Well, mascot platforming, yeah, definitely. Yeah, so I really feel like I owe Sonic Adventure a full playthrough one of these days. I own it in a couple of different configurations. So I really, you know, I like what I have played of it. Like I said, I didn't get a Dreamcast until much, much later, and never got all the way through. But I really liked what I played, you know. Like I said, I think that it really represented what we like about the series so well. Now, where it starts to get a little controversial and starts to get a little dark for a while is with Sonic Adventure 2. I would say that was kind of the beginning of the end for a bit. And sadly, kind of for the Dreamcast as well. It came out in 2001 for Dreamcast and later that year for GameCube as Sonic Adventure 2 Battle, which added like a battle mode, I don't know. That was actually the version that I played. And 2012 for Xbox Live Arcade, PSN, and Windows. I don't remember it being a particularly bad game, but it was kind of like, yeah, dude, I'm grinding on rails. I'm Sonic the Hedgehog. Was I still voiced by Julia White at this point?
No. I don't know that he ever was for the games.
I think he was for some of the games. I don't know.
I don't recall.
Actually, I guess maybe not.
As such, I guess, you know, maybe, but I don't think so.
Anyway.
In any event, you know, I think that the best way that I can sum up Sonic Adventure 2 is to say, you know, this to me is really where Sega started to lose the plot. And of course, I mean, clearly, just a scant year after this, the Dreamcast died and Sega went multi-platform third-party developer.
Yep.
But the single sign that I knew things were awry was when Sega sort of started to do promotion for the corporate advertisement deal that they had made with Soap Shoes to be like the official like grind skating shoes of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh dear.
In-game, mind. I'm not talking about some shitty Sonic product that would be on the shelves of toy stores, because those had already existed for quite some time at this point.
I mean, like
gel pens and what have you.
Did they ever make little Sonic shoe slippers?
Oh, yeah.
They must have.
Yes, I had some Sonic slippers. Aww. I'm 100% sure that they existed. I owned some.
Aww.
So, no, but it's clear, you know, you gave Sonic brand name shoes in his game. Like, Sonic's shoes have a very specific design, but for this game, you gave him some skate shoes.
Oops.
But, you know, I thought it was a cool game. It has that really, really incredible San Francisco Hills truck chase opening level.
Yeah.
And that's still, like, an iconic moment in the franchise. But we also had, you know, such misfires as the awful Rouge the Bat and Knuckles the Echidna treasure hunting stages. You had the Dr. Robotnik third-person shooter stages where he's in the Egg Walker. So to me, this was really where Sega sort of lost the plot on what Sonic needed to be.
Yeah. And, you know, as you said, after this, was when things went downhill for Sega. And, you know, until very recently, starting with early on in Game Buoy, we've kind of been tracking Sega's problems. We really need to do a Sega episode eventually.
Yeah, we really do.
But Sonic Heroes was the first multi-platform release. It was released in January 2004, for GameCube, PS2, and Xbox. Released also in 2004 for Windows, and got a release on PSN only, from what I can find. in 2012.
Well, is that just one of the PS2 classics?
It might have been.
I don't think it was like a PSN port as much as just emulated PS2 game.
That would be my guess. I'm not too familiar because I don't really have much to say about Sonic Heroes. You could like switch between three different characters. So like on one like Heroes team, you were Sonic, Tails, and Knuckles. Then there was like the Chaotix team and like the Rouge of the Bat team. I don't even know. I think my only experience with this honestly was playing a demo.
I bought this game. I remember I played it like once. And, you know, again, Sonic Adventure 2 was the first Sonic game I never finished. I got most of the way through it and I just never finished it. Sonic Heroes just, I kind of didn't like it at all. I kind of hated it, in fact. I think it was the first Sonic game I actively disliked. Even Sonic 3 was just like mild apathy, but Sonic Heroes, like, no. I could be gouging my own eyes out right now, and that would be a better use of my time than playing Sonic Heroes.
It was just kind of like, you know, it felt like it was trying to recapture the spirit of the 2D platformers, but I think it really failed in a lot of ways. It was just I remember a lot of forward movement without, like, very much interesting stuff going on. Perhaps you disagree, so please, if you disagree and are very fond of Sonic Heroes, let us know.
That'll be a Game Buoy Extra, hashtag Game Buoy Extra, hashtag Sonic Heroes is the best, and then tell us why.
Ah! And where things really, 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 really took a wrong turn, in my opinion, was Shadow the Hedgehog, which was a November 2005 release for GameCube, PS2, and Xbox. And I didn't even want to touch Shadow, so I honestly, you know, could not speak, which is kind of unfair of me to judge it, but
let's take these next four or five games in a wham bam thank you, man.
Yeah. Have you played Shadow?
I have played Shadow the Hedgehog. I played it initially at E3 2004 or 5, whatever year it was that I had gone. Must have been 5, because the game was nearly finished and it was on display, fully playable.
You went to see with Jason that year and you played Twilight Princess, didn't you?
Anyway. So I had a great time playing it in that environment. I have to say, the level design looked pretty good. The fact that Shadow had a gun and a lowrider and collected fruit, like, okay, these things were obviously bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, still, the game, it wasn't awful. It was just kind of bad. When I got the proper release of the game on GameCube, it was awful. Like, it was terrible. Like,
what
this
happened?
Was so bad. That one level that I played at E3 was still good. It was still a well-designed level.
That was the only level that was good.
But every other level was awful.
And not even the, like, hero or villain traps could save you. Remember when I talked about Shadow the Hedgehog in the context of Castlevania? And then there was a game called Sonic the Hedgehog for PS3 and 360 released in 2006.
So contemporaneous to its release, Sonic 06 was just called Sonic Next. And in a very real way, this was meant to be Sonic Team's crowning moment. And this was really supposed to be sort of their opus. They were trying really hard to knock it out of the park, and they did focus groups in Japan and the U.S. and really tried very hard to synthesize what they believed the U.S. market and the Japanese market and the European market would really react to.
And they missed on every mark.
The game is an absolute mess. It is broken as hell.
Did we talk about that during our Kusoge episode?
We must have. Like, it's broken to the extent that there's one homing move, the Sonic's homing move, that has been sort of a staple of the 3D games to some degree. If you use it on the end boss of the game, he will throw you 100% of the time out of the orbit of the Earth, and because there's no, like, kill border in the sky, you'll fly out and Earth will zoom out, and it's actually a really cool, pretty view as you're floating among space, and you're just alive until the timer runs down and you die. Because it's just so poorly programmed. The game is glitchy as hell, falling through the world all over the place.
You have a creepy romance with a female human.
Silver the Hedgehog is a telekinetic hedgehog. And that's cool, but like all of his telekinesis is super buggy and breaks pretty much every time you use it. The game is just a mess in every way.
I'm sorry about the story spoiler, but one, you probably already know it, and two, ew. So I would, without a doubt, out of all of the mediocre games in the Sonic franchise, which mostly until that point, you know, like we said, some of the ones, Sonic Adventure 2, Sonic Heroes, were not really great at all. Shadow, eh. But, you know, Game Gear had a couple stinkers as well. I would, without a doubt, say that Sonic Next is, to this day, the low point of the Sonic franchise. I would say it is the absolute worst Sonic game in every way.
You know, I'm prone to hyperbole, as everyone out there in Radioland must know. I'm prone to calling things the best ever or the worst ever. And I appreciate that this will almost certainly fall into that. People are going to be like, oh, that's just Cat and Spike's hyperbole. But I honestly and truly think that Sonic Next might be the worst game I've played in the 360 PS3 generation.
Now, fortunately, a series of games began to come out that weren't so bad. This was, of course, Nintendo working... Sega making some games exclusively for the Wii. The first one being Sonic and the Secret Rings, which was... I mean, I feel like it was supposed to be, like, an ongoing franchise they were going to do with, like, the storybook series. And this was set in the Arabian Nights storybook, and wasn't a bad game at all. I remember you having put a fair bit of time into it. And, you know, it wasn't exactly what I look for in a Sonic game, but it wasn't terrible.
When you look at it as a rehabilitation title... to sort of get the focus back on track, make a solid game that works, that people enjoy playing, I think that this game was an absolute grand slam. It was a return to Gotta Go Fast. Literally, it's almost a precursor to these sort of forward running games on iOS where you're running forward and Endless Runners, that's the word, thank you. Temple Run and the like. Because it's basically that, but with a Wiimote. And you're Sonic, and you're in this sort of vaguely Arabian Nights kind of...
Arabian Nights! Arabian Days!
It's not Aladdin Bowie anymore.
anymore. But, you know, it's really cool because, again, after so many years of really bad Sonic games, something came out where it wasn't super complex, but... It had, you know, exploration elements in that there were branching pathways through each level. They brought back it was a bit difficult. It didn't really feel like a child's game exactly. And it was a solid game. It really did, to me, was the start of the turning point, I'd say, of Sonic being rehabilitated as a gaming brand.
Right. One game that I feel did not really push it a step forward, but wasn't necessarily a step back... was Sonic Unleashed, which came out on...
It's funny to me that you say that, because that game is generally very highly regarded.
I know, and I mean, the thing that's... I'm going to get out of the way right now is Werehog. But Unleashed came out in November 2008 for Wii, PS2, PS3, and P60. 360. And then the next year was available on mobiles. It actually was not bad. The 2D levels, because it had a mixture of 3D and 2D, which is kind of where the trend has been going in the past couple years. And it wasn't bad, but the Werehog is just so silly. So, I can't really judge the game for that, but really, Werehog? And it should be Hogwolf, because were means human.
Yeah, that is
Seawolf,
something I was
Seawolf
just thinking
Jason,
about that the other day.
Seawolf Jason would be the first one to correct anybody who has the proper use of where.
Continue.
So that's Sonic Unleashed. Do you have anything to say about it, aside from it's actually not too bad, but LOL Hogwolf?
Yeah, no, the level designs are great. It does combine some of the gotta go fast, sort of on rails sequences of Sonic and the Secret Rings. Along with some more standard, almost like 3D brawler aspects.
Mm-hmm.
And while I don't know that I think brawler aspects are a good fit for Sonic the Hedgehog as a series, I appreciate that they tried something new without going, like, over the bounds of bad taste.
Right.
In the case of Shadow the Hedgehog and his gun, or Sonic Next and Silver's telekinetic powers.
Yeah. So that was Sonic Unleashed. What would, I guess, prove to be the end of the storybook franchise, I guess it's kind of just a duology, in a way, is Sonic and the Black Knight, which was in March 2009 for the Wii. It was another game in the vein of Secret Reigns, except set in the era of King Arthur and his Knights of the Round Table. Yeah. I didn't actually play that one, but I heard it was, as with Sonic and the Secret Reigns, not a bad game.
No, it was pretty good. I don't have a lot more to say to it other than pretty good. It was a sequel to Sonic and the Secret Rings, and that game's strengths were this game's strengths, and that game's weaknesses were this game's weaknesses.
Yeah, was there anything different from Black Knight that, like, kind of was notable? Because I can't really remember.
I think there were some quick time events that involved Waggle.
Okay.
Well, sword swinging comes to mind. I'm sure if any of our listeners have played it more recently than I, because it's been
almost 5 years.
Yeah, I haven't played it since the week it came out. So, if any of our listeners feel like that's an inappropriate description, by all means, please do correct me. Game Buoy Extra, Sonic and the Black Knight was better than that.
We're gonna have a lot of Game Buoy Extras this week, possibly.
Realistically, no one's going to give us a single Game Buoy Extra. Realistically, no one's going to listen to this. We have like one fan.
Yeah, yeah. And like I mentioned with Sonic Unleashed, the trend over the past couple years with the mainline Sonic games has kind of been towards trying to find a happy medium of 2D and 3D. Well, with the exception of Sonic 4.
Indeed.
Now, technically, this came out a little bit before the game we're going to discuss first, which is Sonic Colors. But because it was episodic, Episode 1 and Episode 2, we're going to discuss Sonic Colors first. Sonic Colors was a Wii and DS game that came out in November of 2010, and I feel was like really the first critically acclaimed Sonic in a very long time. Do you agree?
Yeah, no, this was for a lot of people, you know, I had been talking about how, you could clearly tell that Sonic Team and Sega was trying to rehabilitate the brand, you know, some nearly a decade after losing the plot with Sonic Adventure 2, as we discussed. You know, to me, there's almost sort of a narrative here that forms. But to me, Sonic Colors was where most of the gaming community really stood up and said, hey, wait, Sega's turning out some pretty okay Sonic games again.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was a 3D-ish game. It did have, you know, a lot of gotta-go-fast sequences. There was a bit of the 2D gameplay to it, but you know, there were also 3D elements. Sonic had like some super powers that they had added that were limited
colors,
use
right?
items. Yeah, the wisps. But mostly just had some really superb level design. And really long levels, lot to explore, and really took things to me, again, sort of back to that era of the first Sonic Adventure, but with the mm-hmm. sensibilities of a currently modern, or at least, you know, as of circa 2010, design philosophy of 3D platforming and exploration.
Yeah.
So I really felt like it was a very successful effort at making a fresh and present 3D Sonic game.
Yeah, and my understanding is that a lot of elements, like the color wisps, are also a part of Lost World, which just came out this week, which we'll talk about in a minute. I feel like
the wisps absolutely do return.
Do you have anything to say about the differences between the Wii or the DS version?
I've only played the Wii one. I couldn't speak to the DS version.
I heard good things about the DS version, too.
Now, is that a 2D game made by the people that did the Rush games, or is that like a 3D...
I believe it was a 2D game by the people who did, like, the Rush games.
Okay, and was that Dimps?
Dips, I believe you're right, yeah.
Brilliant. They, you know, they've almost become, like, the 2D Sonic studio.
Yeah.
You look at their work on Advance, Advance 2, Advance 3, Rush, Rush Adventure, Colors, I know that they did work on the Sonic 4 project. They've become quite adept at those things. And, you know, to some degree, and we'll get to criticisms on Sonic 4 in just a moment, but I think some of the common criticisms of Sonic 4 can be attributed to the kinds of games they were instructed to make in, you know, Sonic Rush and Rush Adventure. But I'm sorry to have distracted you.
Oh, no, not a problem. And I know we've been talking for a long time already about Sonic, and there are still other games to talk about, so we're going to start moving this a lot faster for you, but thank you for sticking with us. Sonic 4, now, when it was announced, was a big deal, because everyone thought, oh, we want a return to classic 2D Sonic platforming. Episode 1 came out in 2010 on PSN, WiiWare, Xbox Live Arcade, and iOS. Later had a port in, or a release, rather, for Windows Phone 7, LOL, in June 2011. And for PC and Android in January 2012. BlackBerry Playbook in July 2012, and Ouya earlier this year. And then Sonic the Hedgehog 4, Episode 2, came out in 2012. So, you know, took a little bit longer to get that second part out. Now, like we said, it's, you know, really a classic return to the original Sonic. And, you know, he does have, like, his homing attack, which I think kind of is neat in the context of, like, a strictly 2D. I mean, you know, it's 2D, but, you know, everything's rendered in 3D. It looks really beautiful. But I don't know. Like, I don't think that by any means it was necessarily a bad game. But I feel like there was something that was missing a little bit. You know, we all thought, I mean, at least I thought that what I really wanted out of a Sonic game was a classic return to form in the style of Sonic 1, 2, and 3. I mean, complete with the numbering of Sonic 4, you know, I thought that, you know, oh, this is what I've been waiting for years, for like, you know, 15 years, basically. But, I don't know, something I just felt was a little bit missing for me. Even though, you know, you could do, like, special stages, you could transform into Super Sonic. I don't know, so, like, I don't think it was a bad game, a broken game. I thought there were some interesting things done with the level design. But I just felt like something was missing a little bit that, you know, I had wanted this return to form, and, you know, I think I realized that's actually not what I want out of a Sonic game anymore. What are your thoughts? I know that you are a little more fond of Sonic 4 than I am.
You know, I think it's the best Sonic game that Dimps made. I think they tried a little bit too hard and sort of lost the plot insofar as they introduced some gimmickry that I'm just like, for example, I don't think anybody needed a minecart stage in this game. And, you know, the original iteration of that, because Sonic 4 had a rather well-publicized leak where the game was uploaded to the PartnerNet service.
Oh, I remember.
PartnerNet, yeah. Of course, for those of you that don't know, is sort of the internal testing system. It's like a closed-off version of Xbox Live that all developers have access to around the world, where you can basically upload your game and test it to make sure it works with the Xbox Live functionality correctly, and you know, for other testing purposes.
Mm-hmm.
But the version of Sonic 4 that went up on PartnerNet, literally like 6 months to a year early, it had some really awful gimmickry where, like, you'd use the bumpers to, like, rotate the entire track world around you, almost like you were playing, like, an iOS game and tilting it.
Ugh, yeah.
And I just feel like Dimps really lost the plot on what makes a good Sonic game. That having been said, I actually think it's a great game. I think the level designs are great.
Do you think that it's worthy of being called Sonic 4?
I absolutely do. I think it's better than Sonic 3.
Okay, I will have to disagree, but...
You can have your opinion.
No, I'm just saying.
To me, the only Sonic game that I like, 2D Sonic game, that I like more than Sonic 4, I guess I just came out of the closet as a Sonic 4 fan, because Sonic 4 has a ton of haters. It's not just you. Like,
I don't hate it, I just...
Most people dislike Sonic 4. I really like it. I think it's a good game. I think the level designs are interesting. I think the challenges are cool.
Was it worth the nearly 15-year wait for a proper sequel to Sonic 3?
I think that's irrelevant. I mean, there was a 15-year wait, and nothing the game could do is responsible for that. I don't think that's I don't think that's a fair way to compare it. That would be like looking at Mario or at Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time and being like, oh, was this game worth the 4 years of delays that they made to it? And, you know, I mean, again, I'm sure in your fanboy head, you're already screaming yes. But
yes, a million times yes.
I mean, I think that you have to play the ball on the field, you know. This is the pitch you were thrown, and you hit it from there. Sonic 4, is it a good game? Yes. Is it does it play like a classic Sonic game? To me, yes. So it's
and I know
worthy
that
of the name.
We had been, you know, when we were following the development of Sonic 4, we had been concerned about kind of like the floaty, I don't know if I would describe it as floaty, but like, you know, the physics seemed off from what we saw. And I remember the, like, the gaming journalism industry had kind of been concerned, but I think it ended up being fine. Like I said, I'm not on the hate train. I just don't think that's what I'm looking for in a Sonic game anymore.
I know this is your episode and you're driving the train, but we're already 2 hours in. And
yes.
We're not even done with the mainline games.
I know. So that's why we're
This is why I'm terrified to let you host an episode.
So Sonic Generations came out on November 1st, 2011 for 360, PS3.
Oh, wow, that's...
And
Windows. 2 years ago this weekend.
Yeah. And DS. I want to sidebar DS in a minute. Sonic Generations, of course, is the collection of classic levels from the Sonic franchise with classic Sonic and modern Sonic something something. I don't know. There's like a plot to it. But just basically like a classic best of to celebrate Sonic's 20th anniversary, because back then that was 20 years of Sonic.
Yeah, and you know, I have to say, I've talked about this here on the show, so I don't
want
to talk
about
it
too long. Yeah, that was the era of Game Movie.
But I effing love Sonic Generations. I think it's a superb game. I think that they made really great choices. Even the Sonic 06 level that they chose to bring over, like, even that is a good level. So.
Yeah, they had, you know, like, Green Hill Zone, they had the San Francisco Zone, and they're just
I love
really
how I'm
great.
Like, I'm not going to talk about this too much, and you're, like, calling out specific levels.
Well, I'm just saying, like, these zones that we talk about that are iconic, they did a great job. You know what game was
okay,
not
well,
good?
Good save.
Was Sonic Generations for DS. That was just a mess.
So that was a 3DS game.
I'm sorry, 3DS.
And most people think that it's actually quite a good game. I'm inclined to agree with them. I think you're the outlier here. It's a bit sloppy. It has some technical issues, some frame rate hitches, but the level designs are still pretty spot on.
I just remember getting really frustrated with some of them and being like, no time for that. Now, the last one that we're really going to talk about before we just give you kind of a rapid fire look at some other games in the franchise is Sonic Lost World.
Sonic Lost World, of course, came out last week,
yes,
October 29th, 2013. It is for the Wii U and the 3DS.
Nintendo exclusive.
My understanding is that the Wii U version and the 3DS version do have different world layouts and different stage layouts for each level. I couldn't say that for fact, as I've only spent time with the Wii U version. And further from that, I've only spent maybe 4 or 5 hours with it. So I don't want to misrepresent as if I've played through the entire game. You'll have to stay tuned to a future episode of Game Buoy, maybe next week, to really see what I think about the game when taken
as
a whole. For now, I will say that this is probably my favorite Sonic game.
Really?
It feels like a mixture of Sonic Adventure, the first one, and Mario Galaxy.
Oh, that's awesome.
The way that a lot of this art early on looked, because it looked like Mario Galaxy meets Sonic. I am happy to say it is like that.
That's spectacular. Well, I want to take a look at the very end of this discussion about the future of the franchise and how Sonic Lost World represents that. But really quickly, I want to talk about the portable Sonics and then some spinoffs. So, like I said, we're going to try and keep this rapid fire because you've been sticking with us for a very, very long time. this evening to listen to us talk about Sonic the Hedgehog, and we don't want to keep you for another 5 hours. So I think one of the interesting things when we were talking about the first handheld Sonics is that the first two, Sonic the Hedgehog and Sonic the Hedgehog 2, were originally released as Master System games, and then a couple months after their Master System release, received Game Gear ports. So I'm just going to really go really quickly with these. Please chime in where you feel the need to pitch in.
Got it, dude.
Sonic the Hedgehog, 1991.
Chili Dogs.
Ah, Chili Dogs. Sonic the Hedgehog, 1991, for Game Gear, developed by Ancient. There were some levels that were similar to the Genesis version. It was a lot more linear. You couldn't recollect the rings that you lost. I kind of remember it being unimpressive. Do you have any fun?
I didn't really like the first Sonic game on me Game Gear. I really loved the second, so let's talk about that.
Yeah, so this received ports for Wii Virtual Console and for the 3DS Virtual Console. Sonic 2 came out in 1992 and was developed by Aspect. Only in Europe did it receive a Master System release. There were things like minecarts, hang gliders, so that was kind of cool. That was something that was different from Sonic 2, and also not the first appearance of the minecart, as you said earlier, with minecart stages. Tails is in the game, but he got kidnapped, lol. It's considered more challenging because of the aspect ratio of the Game Gear screen. And I think it's kind of good in its own right.
I liked it. I thought the levels were well designed. Certainly not as straightforward as the Genesis version of Sonic 2. But again, you know, there was a lot of exploration. There was a lot going on. It had, you know, those hang gliders. I actually thought that was kind of cool once I figured out how to work them correctly.
Yeah. It got a 2008 port for the Wii Virtual Console. Sonic Chaos came out in 1993, also developed by Aspect. This was called Sonic.
Fun fact, there was a little girl I grew up with who called that game Sonic Choice. That always made me think, even as a kid, of Sophie's Choice, because she'd be like, Sonic's Choice.
Sonic's Choice. It was called Sonic and Tails in Japan, so if it had been released with this title instead, she maybe wouldn't have been so confused. You could play as Tails and control his flight. This was before Sonic 3. I remember it being okay. You can move faster because Aspect was kind of getting better at making Game Gear games. Tails is easy mode because you can get the same ending without collecting the Chaos Emeralds. Pussies. Oops. It got a 2009 port for Virtual Console. Anything to say, Captain Spike?
No, I'm good.
Sonic Triple Trouble, 1994, developed by Aspect. Sonic and Tails 2 in Japan. It was a direct sequel to Chaos. It had some plot about Robotnik, Sonic, and Knuckles fighting, and then Knack the Weasel, better known as Fane the Sniper, stole all the Chaos Emeralds, lol. It was the first time that getting hit did not make you lose all your rings. Sonic could do a super peel out. You could do a flying spin attack off of a spring. It was kind of more similar in size and scope to the Genesis games. I remember playing a bit of it. It's available on 3DS Virtual Console as of 2012. Do you have any thoughts on it?
No.
That was not a Sonic Blast. Now, Sonic Blast in 1996, not to be confused with Sonic 3D Blast, or Sonic Blast, the delicious frozen treat from Sonic Drive-In. It was by Aspect, but it was a 2D game. You could play as Sonic or Knuckles. It was kind of a mess, because characters took up a lot of the screen, and so that really influenced the design of it. Controls were really sluggish, and you could do a double jump if you were Sonic. That's cool, right? Yeah. No, it was kind of a mess, and... Yeah.
I've actually never played Sonic Blast.
I only played a little bit of it, and I was like, I'm not a fan. Now, the Sonic platformers on the handheld consoles, or portable consoles, continued with Sonic the Hedgehog Pocket Adventure for Neo Geo Pocket Color in 1999. You had that, right?
Yes.
Did you like it?
Yeah, no, I liked it a lot.
And then... In 2002, 2003, 2004, for Game Boy Advance, there were Sonic Advance, Sonic Advance 2, and Sonic Advance 3. And I remember those being pretty alright, weren't they?
Yes.
The first game that I was kind of on was Sonic Rush. It wasn't a bad game, but like you said, it was kind of just a gotta go fast. And I preferred the exploration part of Sonic. So it kind of lost me there. And, of course, Sonic Colors, Sonic Generations, and Lost World also have handheld releases. The only one of which I'm familiar with is Generations, which we talked about. So, spin-offs. I'm going to keep this really, really quick. But there are a couple of pretty neat spin-offs, and lots of different genres that Sonic has branched out into. I want to kind of stick with the spin-offs that can't really be categorized in a certain way. Sega Sonic the Hedgehog was an arcade game with a trackball, was isometric. You played as Sonic, Mighty the Armadillo, or Ray the Flying Squirrel. And it has not received a port, because apparently doing that trackball stuff is, you know, really difficult to emulate.
I did not think that was a good game.
I never played
it. Nickel City in San Jose used to have one.
Really?
Yeah.
Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine in 1993 was developed by Compile and the Sonic Technical Institute. It was a rethemed version of Puyo Puyo, and the first Puyo Puyo released in the West. You know, we plan on one day talking about puzzle games, so I'm not going to get too into Puyo Puyo. I liked it a lot. I played it a lot. It got ports in 1994 for Master System and 2006 for the Virtual Console. The spinoff that's near and dear to my heart is Sonic the Hedgehog Spinball, better known as Sonic Spinball, from 1993. It was by Sonic Technical Institute. You were Sonic in a pinball platforming world, and I think it was pretty good.
What a dumb game. Only a dummy would like that.
Oh, rude. It was kind of like, you know, for the fans who loved Casino Night Zone, it was kind of...
Casino Night Zone the game.
But not quite. I mean, so it reminded me a lot of, like, more like it was an arcade game. Like, in the presentation.
Well, it did definitely have more of a... And it had a point focus, and it was a Sonic game.
Right, right. And just kind of like the visual presentation of it,
I don't know. The visual presentation, you know, it was outsourced. It was not developed by Sonic Team, which at the time was still novel and unique to some
degree. Oh, really? Because in my research, I had found it was Sonic Technical Institute. Oh, it was also developed with Polygames.
Yeah.
You're right.
Like, I'm like, girl.
It got downscaled releases for Game Gear in 1994, Master System in 1995, got a Wii Virtual Console... released in 2007. I like it. It's not perfect, but I thought it was a lot of fun.
You know, I definitely thought it was fun, but I have to say, I really felt like the developers sort of dropped the ball on the physics of the game. Sonic doesn't control with proper Sonic physics, but he also doesn't control with proper pinball physics. So it's sort of like this awkward halfway in between the two. I distinctly remember, in fact, even, you know, because there would be very brief bits where you would, have almost like a 2D platform jump to make. Never more than like a jump, but you'd land on like a platform and have to jump. And it's like, literally, I'm not sure if Sonic will be able to jump like 1 inch across my TV because the momentum in this game is so fucked.
Yeah.
So, again, I think it's a good game. I think it's a lot of fun, but I think they really failed on a lot of the details, this team to which this game was outsourced.
This is one
and
game.
Also, in the art design, I really feel like they missed, again, the details. Sonic, especially at this time, all of the art was very crisp,
right.
Very defined, lots of use of some really interesting, like, faux transparency effects.
Mm-hmm.
And this game is all very flat and drab.
It is.
Rounded edges, not sharp or crisp at all.
I guess that's why I kind of say it looks like an arcade game to me, like an old arcade game. Not an old arcade game, but, you know.
I'm sorry, continue.
This is one game that if it got a HD remaster or something, that I'd like to see the opposite approach of what we saw for DuckTales remastered. I'd like to see things fixed in it, but
yeah.
I liked it a lot. Knuckles Chaotix was developed by Sonic Team, released in 1995 for the 32X. We'll talk about the 32X when we talk about Sega. But Knuckles Chaotix had this weird ring force bond that linked you to the other player. And it was the Chaotix team. It was Mighty the Armadillo, Vector the Crocodile, Espio the Chameleon, and Charmy B.
And several of them, are they a team in other games? I know they pop up in...
They,
like,
pop up in Heroes.
They're, I thought they popped
they
up in Heroes.
They also have an arc in the Knuckles spinoff in the comics.
And I think they have characters from that in the Sonic Riders series as well.
Probably, yeah. It just... not have any current ports, but it was briefly available through GameTap in 2007. Do you remember GameTap?
Of course, I was a subscriber.
Yeah, I remember
you, me, and Rob Roberts used to compete at Hero on that for the Commodore 64 or something.
And you and I played Chaotix. I remember that. That was my first actual exposure to it. There was a game called Tales Sky Patrol from 1995, developed by SIMS, or is it Sims? We talked about this.
We've talked about this before. Just go.
It was a Japanese-only Game Gear game. It was a flying, scrolling platformer starring Tails. It's fucking terrible. It received no ports because it sucked. It was on one of the compilations. We'll talk about that in a bit. Sonic Labyrinth was developed by Minato Giken, which is a branch of Arc System Works. It was released in 1995 for the Game Gear. It was a 3D isometric game similar to Sega Sonic the Hedgehog or Sonic 3D Blast. You pick up the keys before entering a goal, and it actually got a 3DS Virtual Console release. So that's kind of cool. Tails Adventure is sort of a Metroidvania. It's a Game Gear game that came out in 1995. It's available for the 3DS Virtual Console as of this year. It's pretty neat. Your Tails, you're on an island, something about Flickies, I think. You can use tools. Not a bad game. Sonic the Fighters from 1996 was developed by Sega AM2. It was a Sega Sonic arcade fighting game. There was a Saturn version that was planned but canceled. It got a HD remaster in 2012 for Xbox Live Arcade and PSN. These next couple ones, I have nothing really to say about, so just chime in if you need to. Sonic Shuffle for Dreamcast in 2000.
It's basically Mario Party, but with Sonic.
Right.
If you like Mario Party, you'll probably like it.
There's a couple Japanese mobile games in here. Sonic Speed DX in 2001. Good Friend Cow, or Choice, in 2002.
That's pronounced Chow, by the way.
Chow. Oh, it is Chow?
Yeah.
I thought it was like Chaos, like Cow.
Well, it is, and I had that exact same verbal tick for many years.
Oh dear.
But the spoken word, like the spoken cinemas in Sonic, they call them chows.
Wrong.
I was calling them KOs for many years. And someone was like, are you kidding? Don't you watch the cinemas? I was like, no, I always skip them. I hate cinemas and games.
Good Friend Chow. Okay. Sonic Pinball Party in 2003, Sonic Battle in 2004, both for GBA. If you think they're notable, please let us know. Sonic's Casino Poker in 2007 was Japanese only. A neat little side note is Sonic Chronicles: The Dark Brotherhood in 2008 for DS was developed by BioWare.
Yes. In fact, it is
RPG.
It is like straight up a Sonic JRPG. Yeah,
pretty neat. Sonic Jump was a 2012 iOS Android game. Which was, what are those just, jumpers? What are those games called, you know?
I'm just gonna say Endless Jumper.
Endless Jumper. And Sonic Dash this year was an Endless Runner. We talked about it. Sonic likes to do sports a lot. Initially this just started off with some Japanese mobile releases. 2001 Sonic Tennis, and then in 2002 was Sonic Golf, Sonic Fishing, Sonic Billiards, and Sonic Bowling. The first real notable one, aside from that, was Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games, which was a November 2007 release for Wii and DS. I didn't really care for it that much. It's not terrible, but eh. Sonic at the Olympic Games without Mario was in 2008 for Japanese mobiles. Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Winter Games came out in 2009 for Wii and DS. And then there was an Olympic Winter Games for iOS without Mario. Mario and Sonic once again went to the London 2012 Olympic Games in 2011 for Wii 3DS. And then the most notable one that we've talked about very recently was Sonic Athletics, which is the arcade Exer game where you're running. Gotta go fast. Coming out in just about two weeks, is Mario and Sonic at the Sochi 2014 Winter Olympic Games. But fuck the 2014 Winter Games. Russia hates gays, etc. It's going to be on Wii U if you like those. Sonic's also explored the world of racing, so he's got to go faster. It started with Sonic Drift for Game Gear in 1994. That was Japanese only. We got Sonic Drift 2 for Game Gear in 1995. I played it. It was kind of bad, but I still kind of liked it. Sonic R was a 1997 Saturn game that got a port for Windows a year later. I never really thought much Sonic R, did you?
It's alright. It's cute for what it is. As a proto-Sonic racing game, it has its historical values, but I don't think it's a great game.
This was interesting because it wasn't a kart game. You were, like, racing, like, a running race, right?
Yeah, well, you know, Sonic got to go fast.
Yeah. The next couple are mobile games from Japan. Sonic Racing Shift Up in 2002, Sonic Racing Kart in 2003, Sonic Kart 3DX in 2005. The first return to platform racing is Sonic Riders from 2006, which was a GameCube, PS2, Xbox, and Windows release. You like Sonic Riders, I remember.
I effing loved Sonic Riders. Holy cow, dude. So Sonic Riders was really interesting as it had a crossover element, and several characters that cameoed in this game for this crossover, they hadn't appeared in games in quite some time. You had Knights from Knights into Dreams, you had Ai the Monkey from Super Monkey Ball, and the one that I was most excited about, of course, was Ulala from Space Shuttle 5. And none of these characters had really appeared recently in pretty much anything for a few years, so intently sat and I played through the entire game. I put 30 or 40 hours into that game to unlock everything and to unlock, you know, these Sega cameos. I remember the night I did it, Orange Lounge Radio was in the middle of its live broadcast and I'm like in the chat room like, I finally unlocked Ulala!
Aww. Yeah, so, and I believe that was the inspiration for Sonic Rivals and Sonic Rivals 2, right? They were inspired by Riders. Those were both PSP titles, 2006 and 2007 respectively. Sonic Riders Zero Gravity came out in 2008 for PS2 and Wii. And then, of course, what we've talked about a lot, mostly in the context of its latest game, is Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing, which is a Sonic kart game. It's for Wii, PS3, 3DS, DS. I'm sorry, Wii, PS3, 360, DS, Windows, and mobile platforms in 2010. It was pretty competent. Sonic Free Riders was a 2010... Connect launch game, LOL. And of course, you've heard us talk about Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transform. Danica Patrick, Hyper Speed Go. It came out last year, November 2012, for PS3, 360, Wii U, and Vita. And
great game. We've talked about it a lot on Game Boy. Great game.
Great game. And with that, there was some edutainment for the Pico. We're gonna just skip past that.
They had, Tails and the Music Maker. It was a music game.
I kinda wanted to pick up because of that. Sonic Game World for 1996. Sonic Game World
for 96, which was mini games.
And then Windows got Sonic Schoolhouse in 1996. I know nothing about these games, but for the sake of completion.
Maybe before we do a Sega episode, I'll buy a Pico.
So, compilation.
Hashtag me, Game Boy Extra. Hashtag Spike should buy a Pico.
You should price that out on eBay right now while I'm talking about the compilations. Sonic's been ported, well, not ported, but, you know, I guess ported and compiled time and time again. If you're curious about these, I mean, the thing is that at this point there are better ways to get these games, I feel. But, you know, if you need to, here's the list. Sonic Classics was a 1995 European release for Mega Drive. 1997 here for Genesis. The Sonic and Knuckles collection was a 1997
Sega
game for
Pico
Windows.
Complete System with four games included, $99.
Holy crap. Sonic and Knuckles collection was a 1997 Windows compilation. Sonic Jam, as you mentioned, was a 1997 Saturn game, and that kind of let you, like, run around in a little, like, hub world, right? And you could, like, read stuff. I don't know. It got a Game.com 1998 release. Remember Game.com? The ones I remember were Sonic Mega Collection, which was originally a GameCube exclusive in 2002.
Okay, I know you're talking, but this set comes with the Richard Scarry game. It comes with the Magic School Bus, the Berenstain Bears, and Mickey's Blast into the Past. I might buy it right now.
We also have to find Tails in the Music Maker. Which is, none of these Pico games are available on these collections.
Oh, here's Echo Jr.
Aww. Sonic Mega Collection was originally a GameCube exclusive. It got a release in... Bless you.
Thank you.
2004 for PS2 and Xbox as Sonic Mega Collection Plus, also in 2007 for Windows. This is like all of the classic games, so I say it's the best of Sonic. If you're still two generations ago, that's not meant as derogatory, but if you're still in the PS2, Xbox, GameCube days, I would recommend picking this up. It's not, like, you know, perfect ports, but it's a good collection. Sonic Gems Collection, which was for GameCube and PS2 in 2005, is kind of the rest. You can get Tails Sky Patrol on this. Sonic PC Collection came out in 2009 for Windows, and the Sonic Classics Collection in 2010 for DS, which you said, no way. Correct?
Yes. Yeah, that is an atrocious port.
Some quick little tidbits. As we mentioned much earlier in this episode, there were some canceled Sonic games. And I'm just going to take like 10 seconds for each. Sister Sonic was supposed to be a Sonic CD game. It was a role-playing game starring Sonic's long-lost sister. And that would have been interesting. Sonic Jr. was a game for the Sega Pico that was supposed to come out in 1994. I don't know anything about it. One that is most notable for me is Sonic Crackers, which is also known as Sonic Studium or Sonic Stadium, was supposed to be a 1994 Genesis game. It was, I guess, supposed to be Sonic 4, perhaps, but it was the prototype for Chaotix. What they took from Crackers eventually came into Chaotix. I believe you can find like fan-finished ROMs of this on the internet. Go look into it if you're interested. Sonic Extreme for Saturn was kind of the controversial one. It's Sonic Extreme.
You know, to me, and I'm really lamenting here, this might be a thing that we have to discuss in the Sega episode, because we're already 2.5 hours into this.
Oh, gosh.
And I honestly have several incredible stories to tell about that game. That's actually a huge talking point, and I fear we're doing a huge disservice to our fans to not discuss it here, but I don't know that we have time for it.
Can you give me one sentence that would sum up what it was and why it was canceled?
People worked themselves to death to create this 3D...
Literally?
Literally worked themselves into sickness and death to create a 3D Sonic game, and ultimately all of their work was thrown out because they were located in the U.S., and Yuji Naka had gone back to Japan at this point, and Yuji Naka did not want the U.S. team using the engine that he had developed for his Nights into Dreams game, which, you know, the U.S. team had been working on using, Sega's own engine that they had then modified in advance so that it performed much better than the Knights game ran. And Yuji Naka was so offended that he told Sega that if they did not cancel this project, or at least disallow them from using his engine, that he would leave Sega. And so Sega did make this project to use their own proprietary engine. Unfortunately, switching things over is not something so easily done, and the entire project fell apart. And this schism between East and West that we were talking about earlier, really sort of ending Sega's existence as a huge part of the game's landscape, can really be pinned down to that exact moment of where things went critical mass. Prior to that, they could have saved things, but that was the moment where they said, Yuji Naka's ego, we will kowtow to you, we will cancel this huge expensive project based on your personal whims, and instead, you know, this holiday season, instead of releasing a proper Sonic 3D game, we'll just get a 6-week developed port of Sonic 3D Blast out the door for Sega Saturn. That's my one run-on sentence version.
Yeah, I mean, the Saturn era is really kind of just a sad era in the Sega story. And then there was an unrelated game called Sonic Extreme, not to be confused with X-Treme, that was supposed to be a 2002 Xbox game about skateboarding, which I guess was kind of revisited with the 20th anniversary celebration skateboarding event, Sonic Generations of Skate, which was held in 2011.
That's near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, so we've talked a lot about Sonic today, and we appreciate you listening to us today. I want to ask you just a couple quick questions to wrap this up, Captain Spike.
Okay, let's go for it.
I will pitch in with mine. First question, and I'm just going to give you the questions and then. So the first question is, what is it that you love about Sonic?
I love going fast.
What is it that you think epitomizes the Sonic franchise?
Gotta go fast.
And where do you think the Sonic franchise is headed for the future? Gotta go faster.
No, actually, I'll answer this one seriously. So what do I think epitomizes Sonic? I do think Gotta Go Fast is the answer. Because, you know, you look at Mario, for example. I'm going to contrast and compare it to Mario in 2D terms. And I'm going to try to keep this down to 90 seconds or less, so please don't interrupt. You compare Sonic and Mario in terms of 2D platforming. I think the difference between the two, of course, Mario obviously expertly executed in every iteration, in my opinion. I'm a huge fanboy for those games. There is a sense of momentum to Mario that I think a lot of people don't appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, that sense of momentum is sort of escalated and prioritized higher in the Sonic games. The Sonic games are even more about momentum. And when I don't mean this just in the strict gotta go fast way. Even when you're exploring and slowly, you know, waiting for this block to move out and that block to move in, or you're underwater moving forward, finding a bubble, there's a rhythm. There's a rhythm to this design. I think that the level designs are super organic in getting you to where you need to go. Spot, 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 bam. And I think there's a real sense of forward progress and momentum that isn't present in a lot of other 2D platformers. Where I want it to go in the future ties into that. To some degree, I feel like they've achieved bringing that into a 3D space, finally, with Sonic Lost Worlds, you know, it's, again, like I said, sort of like Sonic Adventure meets Mario Galaxy. There's a lot of exploration in a 3D space, but there's also a lot of very pure platforming and running. It's just a real synthesis of sort of the idea, again, of that organic, multiple platforms, bam, 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 bam. Level design takes you to where you need to go. There's a real rhythm to progression. I'd be very curious to know if any of our Game Buoy listeners out there have played Sonic Lost World yet. How do you feel about it? I know there's a bit of a learning curve. The game has very little, like, tutorial or whatever. And there's actually some complex conceits to the game, you know. There's a run button. Sonic doesn't automatically run anymore. It's like a Mario style, like you hold the button and he'll gain speed. You know, there is spin dash again, even though it's in 3D, but it doesn't quite work the way that you would expect it to. So I think there's a lot to it. I think it's a great game, and it actually does represent the direction that I want to see Sonic go in.
That's great.
So when you say, what do you want to see Sonic go to, we kind of just got it.
That's great. So you would say that Lost World is definitely a step in the direction that you want it to go.
I think so. And, you know, it's reviewing very poorly in games media, and I think a big part of
games
that
media
is because there is a learning curve involved.
Mm.
Again, there's not a lot. There's not, like, anyone holding your hand. There's not tutorials telling you what every button does in every context. To some degree, you have to just work it out yourself. But if you're willing to put even a little bit of time into it, it's not like Wonderful 101, but if you're willing to put in an hour, I think you would get a lot out of the game.
Excellent. Thank you. That, you know, I really don't know if I could say a better summation of the Sonic series. For me, I actually think that Sonic for me is more about the exploration and just like these really awesome level designs. And, you know, really cool ways, you know, whether it's climbing walls as Knuckles, flying as Tails, you know, gotta go fast, spinning Super PLLs as Sonic, and just really, like, the way that it brought those ideas into platform gaming that had not really been explored before. I mean, so that's what I love and, you know, what I think kind of Sonic stands for me, kind of. Where I want to see it go is, you know, just continuing to, you know, really kind of explore, like you said, the idea of transforming that into a modern sort of game design perspective. So,
yeah. The host typically keeps these answers brief.
Yes. That's why I did so as well.
Is that what you think Brief looks like?
Well, thank you, Captain Spike, for letting me lead this discussion. Thank you, listeners, for sticking with us. I'm handing the ship's wheel, what do they call that? The steering wheel? Do they call the pirate boat's wheel a steering wheel?
So we have one rumor this week.
Rumor has it.
We have a tweet here from Ed Boon, whom you might know from the Mortal Kombat franchise. And he tweeted an image of the strategy guide for Mortal Kombat Shaolin Monks, along with some text indicating that they just might be working on an HD re-release of same. I'm obviously posting it here because this tweet, such a tweet, again, we can't say for sure that this is happening, but in typical Game Buoy style, we only try to look at rumors that we think are basically for sure. We're just not quite positive. In this case, again, we're pretty much for sure. This seems very likely. Like, this tweet, like, you'd be making a lot of fans angry for no reason to be teasing this otherwise. Shaolin Monks, of course, was a 3D fighter, not fighter, 3D, like, brawler spinoff of the famously successful Mortal Kombat franchise. It was two-player co-op, in fact, starring Liu Kang and Kung Lao.
Ah.
Excellent. This week we are going to skip our Smash or Trash.
Yeah.
So let's get right into...
I said, hey, what's going on?
I'm going to jump in here because I've just been playing more Pokemon Y. It's been kind of a busy week for me, so it's nice to have been able to, you know, come home from work, pop open my 3DS XL, and, you know, I'm still a little bit further behind. I haven't finished the 8th gym even, but...
Excellent. You know, I've finished Pokemon X, so I'm in the post-game now doing a lot of exploring the friend safaris. Are you familiar with this concept?
I am, and I can't wait to get there.
Every person on your friends list, and I'm explaining for people those... who are out there in internet radio land and maybe haven't finished yet, everyone on your 3DS friends list will generate a safari in the friends safari, and there will be three Pokemon that you can catch in their unique individual safari. The real magic here is that Pokemon from any and all generations can be represented in these safaris, including, like, starter Pokemon from, like, Gen 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or 5. So you can get, like, straight-up Squirtles. I've found War Turtles in there.
Like,
so
straight-up, like, evolved ones, yeah. Not just, like, the little babies?
Yeah, I've been using War Turtles I've found to breed Squirtles. I've found...
You nasty.
Yeah, I've found a ton of them. I have tons of starters now from, like, Kanto and the current Kalos. Like, I have a little breeding farm of Pokemans.
Do you have Chespins?
I do. I have tons of Chespins. You can have one if you want it.
Aw, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
What else you been playing?
I've also been playing Sonic Lost Worlds as described here, so I won't go into it at all, actually. and last but certainly not least, I've been playing Lego Marvel. You know, I had talked about how I was waiting to get it on PS4, but I saw that the PS4 launch price was going to be $59.99, and Steam had the PC version for $23.99.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't, in good conscience, like, I'm sorry, I like buying things a lot. You must know that if you listen to this show, but, like, I also really like saving money, and buying that game for $60, like, no, I could not justify that. So, but it's a great game, super cute, tons of personality, extremely Marvel. They leverage it super well. I highly recommend the game. It's the first Lego game I'm really getting super into, and
that's
highly, awesome.
You know, those Lego games are cute, but... you know, sometimes kind of basic.
Yeah. All right, well, with that, I think it's time for you to get into our social links.
All right, our question of the week this week was, this week, in honor of Sonic Lost World, we're talking about Sonic the Hedgehog. Do you gotta go fast? What's your favorite Sonic game? Our Facebook bonus question was, from Super Smash Bros. To ABC's Saturday morning cartoon lineup, Sonic's ended up in some pretty varied places since his debut in 1991. Which of Sonic's side job most comes to mind for you? I'm also going to ask you the Facebook bonus question at the end, Captain Spike. So we got one tweet. I'm going to read the tweet first from ActDeft. He said, Sonic 3 and Knuckles is the best. Agreed. I love that game, as you heard me pontificate earlier. got a little discussion going on over on our Facebook, which started with Renee from Koopa Club. It was a little Koopa Club discussion over at the question of the week, specifically about the bonus question. Well, I guess bonus question and that. So Renee said, for me, it's Sonic Spinball. I'm a big fan of pinball and became excited when this game was announced until I played it. The physics, unfortunately, are subpar, and the music, which in Sonic games are usually the big draw, was generic and uninspired. I disagree with the music. Renee, if you've heard the soundtrack for Sonic CD, the soundtrack of Sonic CD and Spinball, like, the music's really actually great, but, you know, Genesis sound chip, LOL. Jeremy from Koopa Club said, I actually like Sonic Spinball. I don't expect physics from Sonic titles. I kind of disagree to an extent, but, you know, not in the modern sense of physics, so I see where he goes there.
Yeah, I don't expect, like, a realistic physics simulation, right, like, but like I discussed myself, I do have a problem with their interpretation of Sonic physics, so.
Yeah. So I get what Jeremy's saying. Sonic 2 gets my vote for favorite title, though. The soundtrack is stellar, the locales are varied. It just works without being overstuffed, IMO. Nice answer. Renee responded to that, saying, although it did have a lot of flaws, I still loved the game. Spinball, probably my favorite because I'm a huge pinball fan. And last but certainly not least, Ian from Koopa Club says, alright, I have quite a few Sonic titles that I love. Sonic and Knuckles only when combined with Sonic 3. Yes. That was me. Putting these two games together.
Yeah, no shit. Who the fuck else would it be?
Putting these games together was a blast for me. Not only was I able to completely skip the casino level from Sonic 3. Oh, maybe Carnival Night, maybe. Which to this day has me stuck. I will show you how to not get stuck. But I was able to collect the Super Emeralds on top of the Chaos Emeralds. This enabled me to unlock a special Doomsday level, which was very awesome and Dragon Ball Z-ish. Then I remember the only other title that had me weak at the knees was, interestingly, Sonic Adventure Battle 2 for the GameCube. Stellar title, although it has its problems. I remember having that game and it always being in my GameCube when I was completing the difficult mission tasks. Or I was raising my chow in order to put it into races. Aw.
Awesome.
As for your bonus question, I remember the cartoon standing out due to the awful voice acting, starring Julia White, a.k.a. Steamy Miracle.
You know,
that was my addition, by the way.
When this occurs to me, I'm going to take the briefest of moments to interrupt you, and I'm sorry. We did not talk at all about sort of the larger cultural phenomenon
right. That
Sonic nearly was and continues to be in a very strange counter-subcultural way.
Right.
I am going to propose here that sometime in the next 2 weeks, you and I record a 30-minute Game Buoy micro on Sonic the Hedgehog as a cultural phenomenon.
That sounds great.
Brilliant. Continue.
He continues, but I honestly remember being way into the Sonic cartoon over the old Mario one. Sorry I went there. He said, sorry for the lengthy response. Don't be sorry for your lengthy response.
No, we love him big.
We love him. Oh dear.
I
was going to ask you the bonus question, but since we just decided on doing a micro, shall we save it?
I think that would be a good idea, yeah. We'll talk about it.
Because I have a lot I can say about Sonic as a media and franchise, because I bought into that.
Yeah, thank you so much. We'll also talk about some of the fan fiction and fan response.
Oh my god, Sonic fan fiction is just like a world of fan fiction of its own.
Yeah, for whatever reason, and I'm just going to note this very briefly here, we'll talk about it a little more in depth when we get to it, but for whatever reason, Sonic fan fiction is like all other fan fiction magnified by like 40. Like, Sonic fan fiction is fucking weird. I mean, and some of it's very cool, but it's just, like, very intense. Like, this is a fandom that really, really cares.
It gets kind of sexual, too.
Well, I mean, fan
really,
fiction.
Really, really sexual.
Anyway, continue.
Anyways, thank you for your feedback. We love your feedback. We love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We like your Facebook likes. We fucking love Twitter. You can tumble with us on Tumblr. You can plus one us on Google Plus. And Game Buoy Superfan Dandy said that Google Plus is starting to roll out easy-to-remember URLs.
Yes!
But, of course, you can find all of our...
I love that he linked you to a comment about that.
Right?
Me.
Right? You can find all of our social links over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And you can mail us at mailbuoy@GameBuoy.org. about our...
Okay, Mel
Bowie, do your shout-outs.
What?
This is Mel Bowie, get this book. Can you do your shout-outs?
First off, as ever and always, I'd like to shout-out to Koopa Club. That's Koopa with a Q and Club with a K. They're very similar to what we do, and if you like what we do, I highly recommend you check them out. They are probably my favorite podcast on the internet. I'm Commander Shepard. This is my favorite shop in the Citadel. I'd also like to shout out to VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. VG Realness is an LGBT-focused show, as is Koopa Club. Obviously, if you're listening to Game Buoy, you are probably totally okay with that, but it still bears repeating. I'd also like to mention Geek Charisma, a podcast that's everything geek with discussions on movies, DVDs, video games, conventions, and comics, as well as Neshoba Talks With You About Games. Neshoba does something really quite special. He basically is NPR on Broadway about games. Please check that out. And, of course, as ever and always, Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I personally steal ever so many of my cues. I will have two more shout-outs, but why don't you do yours while I go look them up?
Lead me into my first shout-out.
I want to take it to a game bar!
Game Bar, the podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary. They are the gay video game prairie home companion. Nerdgasm Network, the wildest shock shock video game radio show that you'll ever come across. It's a bag of hot dicks. Over on the Voice of Geeks Network, VogNetwork.com, you can listen to Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO, which might have a new expansion being announced soon. And Video Game Outsiders, Horde House, the place for all things online gaming but never too seriously. I would like to also shout out to Video Game Outsiders, who are not part of the Voice of Geeks Network, but they are the podcast about video gaming from the average player's perspective. And last but certainly not least, the Nerd Podcast, that's Nerd with a G. Pop culture rants from a gay nerd perspective. Talk about video games, movie, reality TV, all the things that we gay geeks love. Captain Spike, tossing it back to you.
Yeah, so that was, first off, the Game Over Takeover podcast, your one-stop shop to go to for... That's really strange parsing. I didn't write that. For geekery galore! Well, of course, this is
a... It's because it's G-O-T-O, go-to. It's a pun, or a play on the title.
Oh, I see.
Game Over Takeover.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know all about, like, basic and go-to commands. Basic. I'm basic. Sorry. Of course, this is Wicked and Sin from the Nerdgasm Video Game Network's new show. It's a video game podcast that also includes discussion on board gaming, tabletop gaming, and the various like. I also would like to throw a shout out to the Retrograde podcast. These guys were brought to my attention extremely recently. I've listened to an episode that they did on Pokemon Stadium 2. They basically just sit down and talk about old games one at a time in little 45-minute bursts every couple weeks.
Oh, so they're like Retronauts without the Kickstarter drama.
Exactly so. I think they're really great. We'll have a link for you over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And with that, my friends, I dare say it's time to put this one to bed. As ever and always, thank you so, so, so much for putting up with us. We deeply appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for listening to us geek out week after week about video games.
Absolutely. With that, keep gaming, keep thinking, and cho onsoku hiro tojo.
And toot toot Sonic Warrior.
Sonic Boom! Sonic Boom!
Sonic Boom!
That was my chair, not my butt.
Why you coming home at 5 in the morning? Something's going on.
Let me smell your dick!
The Cannes Film Festival. Cannes.
Skeletons are people, too.
Afternoon episodes, bro. With a little bit of Moscato.
I had a little bit of the stumbly tongue during that Wii update.
I've had a little bit of stumbly tongue, but old Game Buoy, I would have been like...
I am a Game Buoy, I am a Meal Buoy, I am a Game Buoy, I am a Meal Buoy, I am everything that you want, I am everything that you need, but I don't know what I mean.
In quarter one of, I'm sorry, quarter two, 2013, I don't understand fiscal years, I just realized that. Guys have been like, damn, I didn't know a hand job could be that good.
Oh, don't do that.
So, when you're drinking wine out of, like, a regular-sized cup, it's very deceiving, because wine glasses are really small.
How far down are you?
Halfway.
Yeah, so that's a quarter of a bottle of wine you just had.
Oh, lordy-loo!